This is the Hollywood Outsider, weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, we're going to talk about way too much TV, Marvel's building blocks, gender swapping in movies, and franchises that never happened. Let's get on with the show. I'm your host, Aaron Peterson, and I should note that this episode is a best of episode. It's a compilation of some of the best of the second quarter of 2018. And the reason is we took 2 weeks off after the summer because we had a lot of movies and TV to go through this summer. We just needed a little bit of a break for recharge, and we're putting together our fall TV preview. So that is coming out next week. So we will be back on September 19th, I believe. Yeah, September 19th. So we would be back on September 19th with a brand new episode. It's our fall TV preview. I think you guys are going to really enjoy that. If you need something new right away, you can't wait that long, you can always go to Patreon. You go to patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider, and there is our fall movie preview is there, as well as Bad Movie Night, where we take a movie that critics say is bad, and we say, you know what, maybe it's not. Our most recent episode is on Young Guns, so I think you could enjoy that. Go to patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That doesn't mean you don't get anything. So we do have several of the best of earlier in this year to talk about. Before I get there, there's some new stuff, though. Okay, so I've seen so much in the last couple weeks since I took a little break from doing the show, but I at least can really, really quick recap you on it. I saw Searching, which is a great film about a father trying to search for his daughter online. He finds out that she's missing and basically uses all of the online advantages to try to locate her. The entire movie is told through various forms of online activity, whether it be media reports, whether it be Facebook, whether it be Twitter. Really cool. It's kind of like the Facebook movie a few years back, Unfriended, but it's more clever. It's really more involved. It's a different kind of movie. It's more of a murder, or not a murder mystery, but it's more of a mystery, and it's fascinating. So I definitely recommend that one. That is a movie that is playing in theaters now. You can definitely see it, or it'll be on video on demand, I'm sure, in no time. This is not taking very long. Also saw Peppermint. Didn't like this one as much. I'll be honest with you. I did like it. It's a very average movie. It's about Jennifer Garner, whose husband and daughter are gunned down by a cartel. And then she disappears for 5 years, because that's how long it takes to become John Wick, people. 5 years. You just need 5 years of training. She comes back as just Sidney Bristow with a anger management problem and decides to wipe out an entire cartel single-handedly. It's a pretty cool revenge flick in the terms of it's better than Death Wish. Didn't say much, I guess, because the most recent Death Wish was pretty bad. Jennifer Garner is great. The story is not. Every bad guy is like the Snidely Whiplash stereotype, kind of offensive villain. I mean, it's just like, have they, you never met anyone else that's Hispanic? Because everybody acts exactly how they have in movies for the last 20 years. It's just, I didn't like that part of it. I thought, you could do better. Come on. Anybody could do better. So the director of Taken, and it feels like Jennifer Garner hasn't lost a step since Alias. Pierre Morel has. So yeah, it's decent. $5. Searching, I would give about $8. So, I mean, that's the difference. If you're looking for a new movie, go see Searching. Real quick, Ozark Season 2 is out on Netflix. That was great. Barreled through that. Just a great show. Very blue. So blue. Why can't they get a lens where it's not so blue? But it gives the show its own look. Really up the female characters of the show. Jason Bateman's almost a minor player because Laura Linney just takes over and she kicks ass throughout the season as she gets gradually more involved in everything that's going on in that show. If you haven't seen it, start from the beginning, and Ozark is a great show to engage in. And lastly, Jack Ryan. Jack Ryan, the most vanilla CIA analyst to ever live. If you read the books are great. He's very much about Joe America. He's very average in terms of how he lives his life, but he's a brilliant mind and he uses thinking to identify terrorists. And this is kind of like his origin story. It's 8 episodes on Amazon Prime. It's really good. I mean, it's really good. It's not 24. It's not an action-driven show. It's more about following genuine terrorist tracking elements to find a terrorist. And this one has a more personal element or slant to him than other terrorists we've seen. There you go. Four things, covered them all. Whew. I can't believe I got through all of them. This is a fun compilation. I hope you guys really enjoy this. First up, we talk about, is there too much TV? Do we have too much television? Are we losing our minds? It's from episode 308. Casey Spivey from Screen Rant stopped by, and she joined us to discuss that very question. Thank you guys for listening to Hollywood Outsider. Remember, we'll be back next week with our fall TV preview. Here's Casey Spivey talking about too much television. All right, let's go to our From the Outside In topic this week, which, well, first thing I want to ask you guys is a question. How many TV shows, this is off the top of your head, how many TV shows are you behind on right now at this moment? How many would you estimate?
100.
Seriously?
I mean, I'm trying so hard. I got in this vortex of Gilmore Girls, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I mean, it came out when I was a kid. I was like, oh, nostalgia. It's taken me about 3 weeks. Each season has like 20 something episodes in it. They're all an hour long, and I'm one season away from finishing, and I'm like, I have to finish this, but it is exhausting. But I can't. So it set me behind like 3 weeks on all my other shows because I've spent so much time watching Gilmore Girls.
So much Gilmore Girls.
It's too much. It's too much Gilmore Girls. I can only binge one at a time. I can't really hop around.
Johnny, where are you at? How many you got?
Somewhere between all of them and every single one of them.
God. I counted. I have 16 specifically that I have waiting in my, that I know I want to watch or I want to catch up on, and I haven't had a chance to.
But wait, how do you know you have 16 is my question.
I counted them up. The ones that I really, really want to catch up on, I counted them up.
Because I tried to do that, but I lost count every single time. There's just too many. There's some that I started, but just didn't, I got busy and I didn't get back to. And then there's some that I really want to watch, but I want to make sure I'm in the right frame of mind to get into it. Then there's, you know what? There's these that. And that's really my biggest issue is like, okay, there's this. I really want to watch this, but I got to make sure my head's right for this. So I start slipping into let me watch some mindless comedy just to get me over it, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So yeah. I watched
I tried to binge Black Mirror. Black Mirror is a tough one to binge because it's mm-hmm. all like you're so torn up after every episode. That was a dark weekend. And then there was one time where I was like, oh, Big Little Lies. Yeah, I'll put that on and try to fall asleep to it. 12 hours later, I finished the series. Like, I just like stayed up all night and into the day, just binged Big Little Lies. And that one was tough too, because that was really unsettling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it'll ruin your time. I mean, I've like paused to check in on like Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee and the Hilarity for Charity stand-up stuff. But I binged Queer Eye recently. That was great. Those are feel-good ones.
Aw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The world needs them.
I used to love watching the original Queer Eye. And I started watching this Queer Eye, but then I realized that I wasn't in the right headspace for it.
What headspace do you need to be in to watch Queer Eye?
Great question.
I need to be in a place where I'm accepting of good, happy vibes. And sometimes I'm just not. Sometimes I'm just like, you know what? Screw this. I'm not in the mood for your happy people running around doing cool things. I just want to be in a bad mood. And it happens.
What a weird ass place to be. You're so weird. Why?
You're weird.
You know, usually when people are in a bad mood, they're like, you know what? I'm going to put on something that gives me happy vibes. Not John. He's like, you know what? I want to feel darker. I want to DC my life. That's what I want to do. I want to darken this shit up.
I like to dig in deeper. When I'm in a bad mood, I don't like to like come out of it. I like to go out the other side.
Oh, yeah. Just sit in it. That's when I put on a good like documentary series. Gary Shandling. Have you watched that on HBO? The Gary Shandling two-part documentary?
No.
No, that's do tell. Good.
It's like 2 hours each part. So it's a four-hour thing. But Judd Apatow produced it recently, and his mentor was Gary Shandling, and it like goes through his diaries and like all this stuff, and it like it's not feel good really. It's really like kind of heartbreaking. So that's a good one to get into.
Ooh,
Yeah.
Yeah. See, well, when you had, at first when you said documentaries, I'm thinking like The Staircase.
All right. I'm steering you guys back. Let's get back on topic. 55% of listeners said 5 to 10 shows are behind on, and 28% said they were 20 plus shows over. Holy cow. That's a lot. So I guess, you know, over almost a third are kind of with you guys. Do you guys have another list of shows that friends have recommended that you just don't have time for?
Well, I think I've said this before, but I'm actually swearing off most of my friends' recommendations because it has to be some pretty glowing responses from more than just one friend to be able to make it on the list at this point. Because I don't have time for anything that anybody else likes. I don't have time to sit there and watch something that I'm gonna, you know, want that they want to have a conversation with me about. I got too much. I really got too much.
Casey, what about you? Is that on top of your 100, or is that included in your original 100?
That's on top of my 100.
No, Casey, you're not Casey.
Oh, right. Sorry, I forget who I am sometimes.
I know, obviously.
You mean like things that people have recommended to me that are outstanding?
Yeah, like you've got your 100, and then all the other ones. Hey, you got to see this. You'll love it. This will be the best show ever. You'll love it.
You know, I think. I'm usually the one, obviously, per our previous conversation, I'm the one that's pushing shows on other people. Like, I'm the pusher. So, like, I find these things because I'm just, like, always obsessed and I'm always watching something. And I don't think that my friends have the same taste that I do. So they're like, oh, like, you should watch this show. And I'm like, no. What are you talking about? Why would I ever watch that show? Like, I'm a snob, I think. And I'm like, you should watch this one instead.
Watch my show instead.
Yeah, exactly. All of them are usually stuff that I'm like searching through on my own and going, oh yeah, this alien documentary, 100%. That's going on my list.
You like conspiracy stuff? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I got into like a conspiracy wormhole at one point, and it was intense and it was good.
Well, I've got way too many to count, especially from doing this show. Everybody sends me a message every time they find a new show, which is great. I found a lot of gems that way. They'll send me an email, or they'll ping me on Twitter or whatever and be like, hey, Aaron, did you check this out? Da, da, da. That's great. It's just, you know, when you hit about 10,000 of them, you start running out of things that you can watch anymore. So,
right.
I kind of broke this down a little bit. Over 30 or 40 years ago, we had 3 or 4 channels, and then we had cable, and then we had the real cable. Remember, there was originally just the little cable, which was like 13 or 14 channels. Then we got into real cable, where you had ESPN and other stuff. Then we had pay TV or premium TV, and then once Netflix introduced streaming as a legitimate option, our choices just exploded. So as of now, there are around 500 scripted shows on television, which brings us... Yeah, right. It's stupid. Which brings us to our topic. Do you think we have too much TV? Casey, do you think we have too much?
This is a difficult argument because, you know, like watching the Gary Shandling documentary the other day, like his whole goal was to be on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. And he remembers that, like, you know, the day after he was on Johnny Carson, like, he got a TV deal and like everyone in the entire world knew who he was. And it's like, you don't really have that kind of outlet anymore. Same with like Friends or Seinfeld, where like everyone watched everything together. So everyone was talking about the same stuff and you were all on the same page. And, you know, I think it's kind of like we've lost that sense of community in what we watch. But now, like, things can be so – we can watch so much more of the stuff that we like. Like, we're not forced to watch the same thing, you know, over and over again. So we can, like, go into really specific niches. I don't know what's better for the industry either. I don't know if it's better to have more people working at lower rates or a handful of people working and making a ton of money.
Well, it's got to be better for you as an actor because there's more opportunities.
I mean, but like, you know, you could book a role on Orange is the New Black and make $300 a day versus, you know, if you booked a part on Seinfeld, you're getting $5,000 for the day or whatever, you know, it's like very different,
good
but
point.
At the same time, more opportunity, I guess.
No, that's a good point. That's a really good point. Yeah. John, do you think we have too much? Well,
a second ago, I would have said that no, we don't. But it's possible that as an industry, no, you know what? I'm going to go back and say, yeah, no, we don't have too much television. We now have a system that is designed for people to get what they want, as opposed to being force-fed things and trying to find ways to be happy with that. And as an industry, entertainment is now opening up. Sure, the money isn't as good as it used to be for people who are actually participating in that industry. However, there's more opportunity to, in my mind, there's more opportunity for more people to be involved and to become a star or somebody of notoriety within their own niche. So I think that's actually better now, because as far as creative outlets are concerned, that just means we have more to play with, I think.
Are there even real stars anymore? I mean, everybody is a celebrity, it feels like. I mean, everybody is a celebrity. So I don't know if there are really any stars. I mean, The Rock is, obviously we mentioned him a couple times. He stands out because he's huge. But I don't know if anybody else really is seen as a star anymore. So
yeah, I mean, you have to this is terrible, but you turn to YouTube, mm-hmm. and that is actually, fortunately and unfortunately, the next TV. And, you know, we laugh at these like YouTube celebrities and YouTube stars, but that's kind of where it's at. Like, they're the ones who really are influential and have the same kind of power that old stars used to have.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, they have the voice of the younger generation for sure. That's who's watching most of what they're doing. So, yeah, YouTube and Instagram and all these other outlets for social media where people are flocking to these stars for whatever reason. I've looked into some of this stuff, and I don't get why people follow half these kids there. But hey, good for them, I guess.
Right. I think it's harder on the creators, because where you used to have a system there's a reason that there's 8 million departments, like we talked about earlier. It's hard. It's a difficult job. And it's hard to also like manage yourself and to know all the right things to say or do. You know, you see all these YouTubers getting in trouble for controversial stuff where they're all by themselves. They don't know. They're in their room. Nobody's telling. No, there's no producer saying, no, don't do that. Mm-hmm. You know? So there's just a lot of stuff that they now have to do on their own and running these industries by themselves, that it's like, you know, it's a new type of talent and a new type of ask from people who are famous now.
Man, the world has changed. I remember when I was a kid back in the day when I walked uphill, you know, in the snow, there was... like 20 celebrities and you know who they were, and they kind of ran the entertainment world. And now it's not so much anymore. I mean, the word star is tossed around so loosely anymore that you've got the established, the longtime Meryl Streep, Robert De Niro, those kind of people, but there's just not many stars left anymore. It's just not a thing.
No, we talked about this before when we talked about the Oscars, but we're almost to a point where if someone said, what would you rather have, get yourself an Oscar or be in a Marvel movie? There's a lot of people who would say, I want to be in a Marvel movie.
Yeah. For the money or for the influence?
Both. Did you see Zoe Saldana just recently said that there are a lot of actors that still look down on actors that are in Marvel movies, where she'll go.
Yep.
And yeah, she recently gave an interview and she said that there are elitist actors that will look down on her and their other compatriots who are doing Marvel movies, and, you know, basically looking down on them for doing the Marvel film. And she went on to say that, you know, hey, we bring a lot of light to children and the world at large, and why is that a problem for anyone? That's a great thing. And she's not wrong.
Jealousy. I mean, that's probably because they can make so much more money doing, you know, not as artistically innovative stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, one more back to TV. I'm sorry, I got us off on a tangent at that time. The one thing I kept thinking about when I was thinking about this topic is I want more bad TV shows.
Why?
Because I feel like my problem is I have too much good TV. I don't have people telling me, you know, this show sucks, that show sucks. I can't remember the last time I heard somebody say a show was really, really bad. Everybody's always telling me how great everything is, which means I want to see everything, but I also want to go outside and I want to see, friends. I feel like there's too many. I want to watch old shows. I mean, I know, you know, that's not hip anymore, but there are some stuff I want to go back and just kind of check out again. I haven't seen in a while or something. Right. And if the more bad shows I have, the more I can take those opportunities, I guess. So it feels weird, but I think that probably answers my question. That probably means that there's way too much TV for me.
It'll even out soon. I mean, whatever's best for the consumer is what's going to end up reigning. So like all these different platforms where you have to subscribe to and all these like all these shows and stuff, like it'll, I think, eventually even out to where whatever's easiest for us and what's more palatable to us is going to find its way.
With you being in LA, do you get a sense or is there a finger on the pulse for where it's going next? I mean, you talked about YouTube, but is...
I think that Disney's about to come out with something insane. Like, if you watch what they've been doing over the past couple of years, they've bought up a ton of properties. They started pulling their content from stuff like Netflix and, you know, the smaller entities and stuff. And they've announced that they're going to do their own streaming service. I think it's going to be a streaming service and more. And I think it probably will shake things up.
That would be insane. And you know it's going to happen because they own everything else. Why not?
Right. Exactly. And I think that's why they've started owning everything. And it's because I think they're about to do something that's going to shift stuff dramatically.
They're just going to bitch slap Netflix?
I think so, honestly, unfortunately. But it's Disney.
That's true. I mean, you can't really argue with the mouse. So what has changed for you the most with your particular viewing habits, like watching TV shows now versus 10 years ago or however long ago?
For me, the biggest change has been that now I watch TV on my terms. I don't let the TV DVR tell me what when I need to watch something. I'm never running out of room because I don't have cable, so I watch things when I want to watch it, when I'm ready to watch it. And honestly, at this point, I'm reaching a point where come Saturday and Sunday, I unplug almost entirely from the idea of watching TV or watching any other thing possible because, I want to start going out and living life. You know, sure, these shows are great and they're bringing so much joy, but there's so much TV going on or so much TV that has to be watched that I'm kind of rebelling against it in a weird way.
Maybe it's because you're watching such negative, dark shit. Maybe you should watch some happier stuff and you'd feel better about it.
Does I almost said Dr. Horribles, but does, what is it? Lemony Snicket's a series of unfortunate events. Does that count? That's a weird one.
I don't know. I don't watch it.
You should. It's fun. It's cute. It's adorable.
Add it to your list.
Casey, what about you? What's changed for you in terms of your viewing habits? Have you done much changing?
I mean, I think I've always defaulted to always watching TV and always watching movies. As opposed to like, but that's because I'm like obsessed with this art form. But now I can watch whenever I want versus like having to wait until the next week or whatever to watch it. And I won't have a basketball game during the show and I won't have to like catch it on repeat or whatever. Like it's, I guess it's more enabling to my addiction.
Yeah.
Which I don't think that's necessarily a good thing, but I fully enjoy it and appreciate it.
Yeah, same. Yeah. I'm like, TV is a pusher and I'm like, hit me.
Yeah, exactly.
But the one thing that bothers me the most about what now versus, you know, a decade ago, I don't have appointment TV anymore.
Right.
That drives me crazy. I really miss having like water cooler television, you know, after the show airs. Most people I know haven't watched it, with the exception of maybe Game of Thrones. I mean, Game of Thrones is still there. That's one of the rare exceptions. But
I was about to say, Game of Thrones is that. Yeah.
And I think Westworld probably will be as well. People just.
Yeah, Westworld and like if there's football games, there's athletic things.
Sport ball.
The Super Bowl stuff.
It's a huge change for me. I mean, I really miss talking with friends about major plot points. And the next day, you know, we would actually, even if you were online a lot, you know, you could go to message boards and people were constantly talking about what happened that night. Well, now you don't have that because everybody's watching everything the second it comes on because there's so much binge watching. You know, you watch 10 episodes. So when you ask somebody, hey, what'd you think of that show? They know how the whole series ended, where you're still on episode two. I really miss that. I really feel like we have this, and I blame Netflix. So if you're listening to Netflix, I blame you. They created this culture that kind of loathes any kind of delay, any kind of delay. I mean, we're so spoiled right now. We want the entire series right now, always right now. And I think that bums me out a little bit.
I kind of think that over time, though, that habit is going to lessen and lessen because I mean, there are times where I just can't sit down and watch the entire season of Stranger Things. I can't sit down. I couldn't sit down and watch the entire season of this most recent season of I'm about to call it Dr. Horrible again, but it's not that.
Lemony Snicket's. There you go.
Thank you for reminding me of the thing you didn't watch and I did watch. So that's, I think I'm fading now. But anyhow, I didn't have time to sit down and watch the entire thing in one swoop like I did the first time. I had stuff to do. I had a puppy to take care of. I had a wife to keep happy. I had drones to go fly. I had a job I had to go to and I needed to get sleep. Sleep is important. So I think it changed for me, and I have to assume that there's at least a portion of the population which will start changing as well, as far as like they will not feel that need to watch everything all at once.
I wonder if there'll ever be like an app that'll turn your Netflix off, or like log you out and not let you back in from the hours of like midnight to 6 a.m. or something like that, so you'll sleep.
It's called the power button. All we gotta do is turn your phone off.
That's true.
Yeah, it's hard to do. And honestly, I mean, I get it. It's like crack. If you finish an episode, everything's a cliffhanger, everything's serialized, so you get to the end of it, you know, you can watch the next episode, so why wouldn't you? Who needs sleep or food? And that's, I think we get addicted. I don't see it changing though, John. I think you're nuts. I can't imagine. We're getting more and more demanding of everything right now. I don't see that changing. I mean, you even see networks are starting to look at different ways of doing television. CBS, you know, they have Star Trek Discovery and they have their own little web, you know, what do they call it?
Web series, webisodes.
Well, no, it's a series, but I mean, you know, they have their own channel, their own basically streaming service.
Oh, okay.
Subscription service. And I can see networks going more to that because everybody wants their stuff right frickin' now. They don't want to wait week to week to week as much anymore. And I see that getting stronger, not less.
So you're saying I'm the weird one?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh. Well, that's new.
You see something in the human population I don't think Casey and I are seeing.
We have less faith in humanity.
Exactly. And ourselves, because I totally am probably going to keep binging myself. So.
Yeah.
All right. So it's a great problem to have at times, but do you ever find it stressful, Casey?
I mean, yeah. I also like trying to catch up on old movies that I never saw or watched, or, you know, it's just like I feel like I, no matter how much I watch, you know, like I just watched V for Vendetta for the first time, and like, you know, I'm trying to catch up so that I can talk about classic stuff, but then there's new stuff that's coming out and I have to keep up with that, and you know, it's just like it's a lot to try to even just like keep in the conversation, especially with film people.
That's a great point about classics. It's so hard to get somebody to watch a movie that's not, or show or anything that's not new anymore because there's so much.
Right, exactly. Like you don't go back and go on a Friday night, oh, what should we watch? Oh, let's pull out this classic. It's like, let's try to get through three episodes of this show.
Yeah, I've actually been, I was this past weekend, there was actually a moment where, hey, do you want to watch The Last Jedi? Oh, man, I mean, it's kind of been out for a couple weeks. It's been on Blu-ray for like 2 weeks or something, and it's already too old to watch now.
Wow, that's insane.
I got to enjoy a fun conversation. Where I live, we have a film school, and actually it's my alma mater, because before it was a film school, it's just a straight up art school as well. But where I work, we had a couple of the students show up and they want to use one of our spaces to film a movie in. And yeah, as I'm doing something for them, I am listening to one kid look over to the other kid. Hey, man, I saw this other movie last night. It's kind of old, but it was really cool. It's really old, though. You should watch it. And the guy goes, yeah, what movie was it? Well, it's got the guy from that played Star-Lord's dad in it. And it's called Big Trouble in Little China. You should really check it out.
That's not old.
And I was listening to that, and I started shaking my head and laughing. And I go, you guys check out They Live? Oh, my God, that's so old, but so good, too.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
That's so funny.
That is funny. And his name is Kurt Russell, and they should freaking know it, all right? He's a god amongst men.
What film school is this?
Right? Amateurs. They don't deserve their degree. They don't deserve it. I got two things about all of this stress me out. I can never keep up with what I want to watch. Number one, obviously, I think we already talked about that. And then the people that keep hounding you to watch something watch some show that they like, which is fine, but they typically throw that, why haven't you finished it yet, of whatever show that you are watching, or they get mad at you because you haven't watched their show yet. Like, who has time to watch everything everyone recommends? Who? No one.
No one.
Right.
It happens to me all the time. And I have friends who know what I do for this show every week. And they're like, well, did you have time to watch this? No, man. I got things I got to watch for the show.
I actually wish they would stop coming out with new movies every week and Netflix stop dropping 8 shows a week and just give me a chance to breathe. Just take a month off so I can catch up. That would be great.
Did anyone finish watching Altered Carbon?
I started it and I, mm-hmm. It didn't catch me.
Okay. So it didn't catch you, Aaron.
I never started it because I didn't have 10 hours to kill.
Yeah, I started it and then I watched the first episode twice and I enjoyed it thoroughly both times. I still haven't gone back to it.
Oh, interesting.
So much. Casey, what's your rule? Like, when you do watch a show, how many episodes do you give it these days? 1, 2, 3, 4, one? What?
This isn't really a reflection on what I think should be put in place in any way, shape, or form. I am an impatient person by nature. Mm-hmm. If I am not hooked in the first 20 minutes, I'm out.
Ooh, she's tougher than I am.
Damn.
It's bad. It's bad.
I respect that. You just throw a gauntlet down. Like, you got 20 minutes to get this, and then yeah, I'm out.
Well, because I've watched so much by now that I'm like, okay, I see what the tone is, and I see where this is going, and I get the vibe, and I can pick up on the writing, and I'm like, okay, I can't do this, or like, all right, I'm really into this.
So my general rule that I've given out for people is that it's 3 episodes. You have 3 episodes to catch my attention. If you don't have me after 3 episodes, you're not going to have me at all.
Yeah, that's a good. That is something I support. It's not something I follow, but I would recommend that.
You don't even get through one. What are you talking about? Like, the main character hasn't even showed up in Casey's show. She's like, well, this isn't going to work out for them.
Yeah.
Okay, and we're going to go from Casey on over to Marvel. And this time, it's from episode 310. This is where Scott Calgaro joined us to talk about building a Marvel universe. It's a little bit of a longer topic because we do cover like all 10 years of the MCU. If you want to skip it, look at your show notes. There are timestamps. But otherwise, let's get right into it. Building a Marvel universe.
There was an idea. Stark knows this. Called the Avengers Initiative. The idea was to bring together a group of remarkable people. See if they could become something more. See if they could work together when we needed them to fight the battles that we never could. Phil Coulson died still believing in that idea. In heroes.
You guys ready to get into this? Of course you are.
Yeah. Here. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Well, this month marks 10 years of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. 19 movies, that began with Iron Man, which led to the Incredible Hulk, Thor, Captain America, Guardians of the Galaxy, Ant-Man, Black Panther, and a reemerging Spider-Man. That doesn't even include all the side heroes like Black Widow, Falcon, War Machine, the Wasp, and of course, Agent Coulson and Peggy Carter. So this week, before we jump into the culmination of those 10 years of Marvel films, we're going to look back at the cinematic universe and what building it has meant to us as fans. I do want to say before we get going, did you guys think 10 years ago when this whole thing started that we would actually be here and that this wouldn't just fall apart midway somewhere?
No, I didn't think that this was going to work, actually, because they picked the lesser known superheroes like Superman and Wonder Woman and all the Justice League characters, the DC universe. At least when I was a kid, those were the better known superheroes. Iron Man, Thor. I read those comics, but a lot of people didn't. They weren't like the well-known heroes that you would expect to see. When I saw they were doing an Iron Man movie, I was like, really? That's the one that they picked? Iron Man? The one that like nobody read? And it turned out to be a brilliant choice. So, yay Marvel.
What about you, Jeff? Yay Marvel! That's what everybody says now. Yay Marvel!
Yeah, I had no idea that it would last as long as it did. And I think in the 25 years that this show has been going on, I think I've heard everyone say at least once a year that, that's coming from the point of view of a fan, that this is the year comic book movies die, but yet Marvel seems to keep going. And yeah, no idea that it would last this long or it would do what it did and create a whole movement of movies that are all connected like this. It's really great of them.
And are you saying the Hollywood Outsider has been on for 25 years? Because that would make me super old, jackass.
Yeah.
I think that was the point.
I don't think he understands how maths work. That's what I think. What I found is that I 100% thought this would collapse with Thor.
Yep. Because that was when I thought it would kill it too.
I think it's the hardest, probably the hardest character to pull off. And Hulk's up there. But they really found a nice way to bring everybody together and make them all work. I mean, they turned Thor into a boob and everybody loves him. So who knew?
Well, I think that was brilliant of Stan Lee, like back when Thor was first created. Let's pick Norse mythology to do a character that we want the American public to get behind. We don't care about our own culture. I'm really shocked that Thor has worked as well as it did. I think there were some concerns when they first were going to do Thor. It was like nobody even knows who this person is unless they're really diehard Marvel fans. But he's one of everybody's favorite characters. They did a great job with
him. Now.
Now. That's what I mean.
After
now.
Ragnarok and stuff, you know, when they made him a boob. They made him a little bit of a dim bulb and then suddenly – or not, yeah. You know,
Well, I don't know if that's true.
Well, I think they did the best they could to make him more personable. He's not so much of – this is the mistake that some other universes may make where you're dealing with characters that are gods amongst men. And yet what they did with Thor is they made him a god, sure, and he is among men, okay. But he's fallible just like everybody else is. And he has to go back and forth between huge cosmic powers and itty-bitty little brain.
So you're saying basically they made him more relatable versus more a boob.
Right.
Right.
I was going to bring this up later, but this is actually a perfect place to do it now. I almost had a problem with Thor Ragnarok. It's one of the few Marvel movies that I didn't see right when it came out because the humor in the trailers kind of turned me off to it. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, now they're just getting ridiculous.
Well, you missed out.
Well, I watched it. I know. I watched it, and I was kind of making the same complaint. My daughter was watching a little bit of it with me, and she said, Dad, they're in the Guardians of the Galaxy universe. And I'm thinking that's a perfect way to relate to that because the Guardians of the Galaxy is by far –
spin-off, basically.
It's ridiculous. But apparently in this universe, when you get out into space, not only does stuff get dangerous, it gets a little bit goofy. And that's just all that they did was kind of put Thor into that goofy Guardians of the Galaxy mind frame. And once I made that connection, I was fine with it. I thought it was great.
It's a lack of oxygen, probably.
That must be it. Mm-hmm. Lack of gravity, something.
All right, well, let's start from the beginning, all right? We're going to go through the Marvel Cinematic Universe, basically building the MCU. And we can all agree that Robert Downey Jr. and by extension director Jon Favreau built this universe. But many forget he was washed up as an actor when Iron Man came out, and Jon Favreau championed him for him because people didn't want him because of his past. Insurance companies didn't even want to cover him because they did not know if he would become a liability. So while we're not going to discuss every actor in the MCU because that's way too long of a podcast, We have to talk about Robert Downey Jr. And why do you think Downey Jr. in particular connected with fans?
Well, I think the big thing to remember about Downey Jr. is that he, and about the character of Tony Stark, is they're very much kind of the same person. They're both brilliant geniuses in what they do. They both are personable and have and connect with people very easily. And they're massively flawed in their addictions. And Tony Stark, you know, actually, I'm almost about to say Robert Downey Jr. Actually, I meant to say Robert Downey Jr., but I said and Tony Stark because, well, now they're the same person.
They are.
Downey Jr. just, you watch him in anything he's done, especially since this, and he, you know, at any given moment, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what kind of decision he's going to make. And you feel like you're watching somebody look at every single angle. And he's just a lot of fun. And you can see how good he is just by in Iron Man, the first Iron Man, the way he interacts with the robots. It's like they're people. And they might as well be people to him. It's just neat. It's neat to see what he does.
Anybody doubt him? I've always loved him as an actor, but as soon as they cast him, I'm like, well, this is curious. You're going to put one of the most notable character actors who basically just spiraled into the abyss. I mean, with his alcoholism or drug addiction, whatever it was he had, his storied past, his problems. You're going to put him in charge of a possible universe? And I don't think at that time we even knew it was going to be a universe. We just knew it was going to be this big budget Marvel movie. Marvel's striving to do something right. And
yeah, at that time we had no idea what the idea of a universe was.
Right.
Yeah, the big cinematic universes didn't exist until this. This is really the first one that's pulled it off well.
But they obviously have a plan. And to realize that to look back and realize their plan was to put all their future and fate and roll the dice on this guy who's had so many problems in his life. And granted, he's out of that. I mean, he worked himself out of it, but that's a huge gamble. I mean, we always talk, or people, fans always talk about the Marvel universe being a big gamble just with the movies in general. To put them all in his hands, I think, is probably the biggest gamble they made.
Well, talent succeeds. That's pretty much a general rule in Hollywood. If you're a really good actor, you'll figure out a way to make it work. Robert Downey Jr. is an amazing actor. He ran his career off the rails on his own. That had nothing to do with his ability as an actor. It was all personal issues with him. He's a phenomenal actor, and John kind of hit it in saying that he's basically being paid a lot of money and carrying this universe by playing himself on camera. I think that helps because it was a character that he could very well relate to and get into, and it set the tone for everything that came after it. The original Iron Man.
I totally agree. I'm just saying that it's extra kudos for Marvel for taking that chance, because I'm sure at the time there had to be people in the room, because there's always a room of people making this decision. There had to be several people in the room going, wait. You're banking our entire future on this guy who has folded several times.
Somebody put their career on the line for him.
Absolutely.
That's the only way I can see that ever happening. Somebody went to the executives at Marvel Studios and said, we have to cast Robert Downey Jr. And I'm sure they said, if this fails, it's on you. Mm-hmm. If we take this chance. I don't know who that was, but I'm sure there's a story there of somebody who went to bat for him.
So why fans connect with him? Because Iron Man, like Scott was saying, Iron Man is very an ancillary character, or secondary character in the comic book world. At the time, anyway. I mean, I didn't even know who Iron Man was, and I'm a big comic book fan. I mean, I knew the character, but I didn't know the extent of his mythology and everything. He just never excited me. He's a big robot guy, a drunk and a robot guy. Why is that guy connecting with fans? I mean, what about it? Was it just because the movie was great? Was it because of his performance? Was it Jeff Bridges wasn't playing Rooster Cogburn? You know, what was it that made fans go, love this movie, let's see more of this?
It's a flashy character. I mean, let's face it, Tony's a dick. But he's a relatable dick. Everybody likes him. He's very charismatic. And they had to launch this universe. If they had this whole thing mapped out from the very beginning, they had to have. And to launch something this big, they had to have an attention-grabbing, flashy, shiny thing at the very beginning, or nobody would have paid attention to it. Tony Stark and Iron Man is very flashy. It's very attention-grabbing. And I think that's why they went with it.
Let's go a different way on this.
Okay.
Up until Iron Man, we a lot of the big-name Marvel characters have hit the screen, and and sure, they were fantastical, they're amazing, they did all these things, and but they wanted to create something that, in the time of, we're still talking about, this is happening around the time of Batman Begins and Dark Knight and all that other hoopla. So the people are telling movie creators that we want something that's like Batman but different. And the only character in Marvel that kind of fits that whole Batman but different mold is Tony Stark. He is nearly the complete opposite, with the exception of their superpower is that they have a lot of money.
I think that's a really good point, actually. He's a human superhero. That there's right. nothing special about him except his bank account. And that's something right. that a lot of people can relate to, I think.
And that's a great way to usher us into this, because you got to think, you got to buy people into what you're creating. You got to say, okay, well, look, we're going to keep it more or less realistic, with the exception of these amazing robot suits. But we're going to also just make it a rich guy, and people can relate to that a lot quicker and a lot easier than they would somebody who can fly, or somebody who can do this, or somebody who's can turn themselves invisible. If you want to usher somebody in, you introduce them to somebody like them and then move from there.
So you're saying we're all drunk philanthropists, millionaire playboys? What?
Geniuses. Well, I know you are.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Thank you. Appreciate that. All right. Well, I guess that kind of makes sense. At the end of Iron Man, we were treated to a stinger at the end of the movie that hinted at a larger cinematic world. And now none of us can leave any movie before the credits are over. So thanks a lot for that, jackasses. How do you feel about how movie? I mean, seriously, I'm watching romantic comedies. I'm like, well, I got to stay till the end, because you never know. They could be connected to Marvel or something. I don't know. They could be connected somewhere. How do you feel about the fact that now movies use the stinger? And the stinger is the after credits scenes, or after, you know.
I think that I'm kind of a mixed mind about it. I love the stingers. I think they're awesome. I think that was a brilliant thing that Marvel did all the way back to the very beginning to tie into the next movie in line. That being said, after a 2.5-hour movie, when I really have to go to the bathroom, sitting there through 5 or 6 minutes of credits waiting for the last stinger drives me crazy sometimes. But if you don't, you kind of have to at this point. Like, mm-hmm. everybody who didn't sit through the credits for Thor Ragnarok, the beginning of Infinity War would make no sense if you didn't see that stinger. So they're almost required viewing at this point. And you can tell who the real Marvel fans are. Like, when I went to see Black Panther in the theater.
Oh, we're using that terminology, the real fans.
Well, huh? No, here's my point, though. When we went to go see Black Panther in the theater, a lot of people went to see that. And it was the first Marvel movie they'd ever seen, because it was geared towards a certain mm-hmm. demographic. Mm-hmm. When the movie ended, easily 3/4 of the theater got up and left when the credits started to roll.
Oh, because they didn't have that
Because they didn't have the Marvel knowledge. When I went to see Infinity War yesterday and the credits started to roll, there's not one person in the theater moved. Everybody right. knew the stingers were coming. So it's almost like a way that you can sit in a theater and go, okay, this person's never seen a Marvel movie before, because the credits just started and they just got up and left. Mm-hmm. And you can miss a lot of really important information if you don't see those stingers.
I like it when most of the movies these days are starting to use stingers for whatever reason. And it doesn't have to hint to me that something special is coming down the road or anything else like that. It's like one more little morsel or bite of something that's great. And it kind of winks at you and it says, hey, how you doing? And I'm like, hey, hi back. I'm doing great. That was fun. And I
man,
like
you talk
it.
To your stingers? What the hell is wrong with you, man? You talk to you like, hey, what's up, stinger? That yeah. is totally not
a, it's John.
An item.
It's
or an object.
It's like totally flirting with me. It's making bedroom eyes. I like it.
Why do you sound surprised, Aaron? It's John.
I just sound creeped out, is really what okay. the sound should allude to.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm okay with it. I don't know why you have to have a problem.
Here's the thing that I love that Marvel does it. I don't love that everybody tries to copy it, because so many other movies don't do it as well. They're not, for one thing, nobody can really build the same universe well. So they're constantly teasing things that they shouldn't be or whatever. I mean, you go watch Justice League, which I really like Justice League. Don't really care what anybody thinks. I'm a big fan. And then you have that stinger, which set up a world that now we don't even think is going to happen. So, I mean, it was just a waste of a stinger. And so
it's a world we don't think it's going to happen because of what we know outside of the movies. It's
true.
if we weren't aware of what's going on outside of the movies, like, you know, Affleck's getting some stupid Phoenix tattoo and talking about how he's having his midlife crisis. If we didn't know that, we would think, hey, that Stinger was pretty cool.
Yeah, well, it's not just Justice League either, because like at the end of Kong Skull Island, they had a tie into Godzilla, the Stinger tied in with
you
Monarch,
watch your mouth.
Dude, that universe is not going to happen.
I think it might.
You watch your mouth. That is going to happen.
I want it to.
They're working on King Kong versus Godzilla right now.
Uh-huh.
As we sit here.
Yeah, I believe you. I'll believe it when I see it. The what was the Monsters one? The other one where they were going to tie in Dracula and all the others? Didn't Dracula the
Mummy?
The Mummy had a stinger for it. That is another universe where they're saying it's probably not going to happen. I think
that's definitely not going to happen.
I think studios have seen the success that Marvel had with it, and they think that this is the only way to do it, is to use a stinger to go, oh, hey, there's going to be more. This is going to be a universe, mm-hmm. because it worked for Marvel. You can't always recreate success.
You know, that leads us into the next point. After Iron Man, we had Incredible Hulk, Iron Man 2, then Thor, Captain America, and finally the Avengers. Officially, we now had a cinematic universe, which we've already alluded to several times. We had one. Holy crap, this worked. Sequels that aren't sequels, movies that connect but don't really have to. And since then, every single studio has tried to duplicate it. Even Transformers is trying to make a cinematic universe. Whatever. And most have failed, or at the very best struggled with it. So what is it that Marvel is understanding about cinematic universes that everybody else seems to miss, John?
I think Marvel, Potterverse, Star Trek, I think they all do something that everyone seems to forget, which is there are hard and fast rules for that world, and they affect everybody. They affect every movie, and you have to follow along with those. I think the ability to go back and look at things from the movies and make sure you tie it into each other is there. You can see the web working and everything, and I think that's where you start going, I'm in a world here. I'm not just seeing like another Transformers movie. I'm where it's just Transformers on the screen. Marvel and the Potterverse and Star Trek, I'm in those worlds. I'm part of it, and it lets me know that there's more out there to be seen. And I think that's what everyone seems to miss.
I think John's got a good point. I think one of the things that Marvel did that really no other studio has done, because they're trying to play catch up with Marvel. I mean, let's face it. Marvel's now the bar that everybody's trying to clear when it comes to a cinematic universe.
Good luck with that.
They had this written out through the end of the adventure when they started.
One would think, anyway.
Yeah, like J.K. Rowling with the Potterverse. She knew how that was going to end before she ever started writing Sorcerer's Stone. And I think having a coherent vision from beginning to end lets you keep that world in sync, like John was talking about. Mm-hmm. There are rules.
Right.
There's a timeline. They tie together in a way that makes sense. They're not trying to mash something together and see what sticks, because they already had all this mapped out. Everybody who's trying to play catch-up is just trying to mash stuff together and hope that it works, and that's never going to be as successful.
Yeah, and I would add to that, what people seem to forget, and especially with Iron Man, Incredible Hulk, Captain America, Thor, those movies worked completely on their own. They didn't need any connection whatsoever. The stinger is really what connected most of those first movies. You know, there's a little bit as it went, Coulson kind of connected. But if you didn't see Iron Man and Coulson popped up in Thor, it didn't take away from Thor, because that movie worked fine on its own. Captain America worked fine on its own. All these movies worked fine on their own. That's what led to the universe. And what I think people try to do is they keep trying to connect them during the movie, which makes the movie feel jumbled. You know, you go to the DCEU, it's jumbled. I mean, they're trying to incorporate elements that connect everything, and it doesn't quite work. Transformers might work. I mean, we don't know, because they do have a world established. We haven't seen their connections, so we don't know yet. Well, based on the last movie, not so much. But the Dark Universe, what I think that the Mummy, they made two big mistakes. They had a major actor involved, which hasn't happened with a Marvel Universe. They haven't had a big named actor take a role. I mean, Downey Jr. is only big name because of Iron Man, not before that. He was just a character actor, really. And then you had so much of the world building in the middle of the Mummy that took you completely out of the story of the Mummy, completely ripped you out. That whole Russell Crowe subplot about this, whatever the hell they were doing, completely ripped you out of that story. That's what I think people keep making the mistake of. Make movies, at least the first few, that don't need to connect to actually be part of the universe. They connect them at the stinger, connect them at the very end, connect them very subtly. Stop making 20-minute subplots that connect the movies.
Marvel's been brilliant with that. It's the effortless way that they do that that's kind of what I was alluding to too, which is like Black Widow shows up in the very first Iron Man as Tony Stark's assistant and has a big thing at the end.
Second one.
Coulson and Hawkeye show up in the first Thor. Coulson has a somewhat bigger part. Hawkeye's only on screen for less than a minute in the second Thor movie. So
what to do? I'm starting to root for this guy.
Right. That whole part. And it's like, it doesn't draw attention to itself when you're watching that movie. But then when you see the Avengers, you're like, oh, wait a minute. That was a dude that was in the first Thor that was, you know, rooting for Thor to get to the hammer.
He was in Iron Man 1 too, I believe.
Was he in the first Iron Man? I didn't think so. I thought the first time we saw him was in Thor.
No. He showed up in one of the Iron Mans because he's trying to get Pepper Potts to make an appointment. No, it's the first one. Oh, you mean
Coulson.
That's what I said, Coulson.
Yeah. No, I said Hawkeye.
He's talking about Hawkeye.
I'm talking about Hawkeye.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Yep. I'm following. I know what he's saying.
Using characters in such small roles early on in the series and then giving them much, much bigger roles later on is why this whole universe works, because it's effortless. The audience makes the connection later. They're like, oh, I've seen that dude before. And that's how everything ties together.
And it's a great way to test the character too. Instead of going back to The Mummy, because that's the one that just boggles my mind. That movie could have been – there are moments and elements in there that are freaking great, and they ruin it because they just were rushing to make a universe. But give us a taste of a character. Give Russell Crowe having one scene for 2 minutes instead of 15 minutes in the movie. And I think that works so much better than what they did. Like Black Widow, she's great in Iron Man 2, and it makes you want to see her more because she's not in it. She's not overwhelming the film. You know what I mean? So you want to see more. And you can test that character. See if it works. See if it doesn't work. Maybe it's not going to work. And you know what? We'll have to write her out. It's Jar Jar. We're going to take her take her out of the next couple movies. You know, that's how you can test characters. And I think that's important to building a real world.
You know, I think the Godzilla monster movie thing did something brilliant. Now, granted, we only have two movies for that, but we had Godzilla and then we had King Kong. But for King Kong, they went back to, what was it, Korean War or Vietnam?
Vietnam.
They went back to Vietnam, and you had to completely forget that the two movies are connected, because they don't feel connected, with the exception of the mention of, what's the name of that organization?
Monarch.
Monarch. So with the exception of Monarch, they don't even feel connected until the very end. And I think that's something that they're starting to do right, and hopefully they continue to go down that same path where it feels more and more connected as they go along. I just think that you're right. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
That's a long way to say.
I lost everything I was saying, and then I just was like, "All right."
One of the interesting things about those two movies that they do tie together, but Monarch is the only thing that ties them together, because splitting the time frame by that much, from the Vietnam War up through Godzilla, which took place now, is that no characters crossed over. None. There's not a single character that appears in Kong.
Not yet.
Well, they killed most of them, so that's going to be tough. But I think it's interesting that they're making that work without any character crossovers yet.
Didn't you just say 5 minutes ago they weren't making it work?
Well, you apparently have overruled me on that, because you guys seem to think that it is working. So I'm crossing my fingers. I want that to work.
It's two movies. It's a little too soon to say whether or not it's working. Yeah, but those two movies are still pretty great.
All right, that's a perfect segue, I think, to move on to the next topic, which is, along the way, a couple actors had to be replaced. Most notably, Terrence Howard. Just ask him. He'll tell you all about it. He loves to talk about it.
Yeah, he does.
And Edward Norton. Mostly their casting has been pretty spot on, though. So who has been your biggest surprise that embodied a hero or villain better than you ever would have given them credit for, Scott?
I'm going to talk about a recast first, because Edward Norton kind of sucked as Bruce Banner, and Mark Ruffalo is awesome. I think that was one of the best choices that...
Really? You didn't like Norton at all?
I did not. I did not think he worked. I think he was fine as the Hulk when he was doing his motion capture. And
when it's not Edward Norton?
When it's not Edward Norton, he was fine. I think Mark Ruffalo is perfect as Bruce Banner. I think he's exactly what they needed. He's a charismatic actor. He's better, in my opinion, as an actor. And
I'm glad you said that, because it's kind of against the law to say Edward Norton wasn't good in something. People seem to think he's amazing.
I'm not a fan. Never been a fan.
I think he's Edward Norton. He's overrated. Other than Primal Fear, I'll give you that one, and maybe American History X. Nothing else has really impressed me.
Sorry, Ed, you can stop listening now, but I think you're overrated as an actor. I think Mark Ruffalo is a lot better. Ooh. That's just my own opinion.
He just slammed his iPod player.
I know.
I'm sure he still
I really loved him in Death to Smoochie.
Wow. Wow. That's all right.
That was the one that stood out to me when I saw that in the show notes, was like, that was just brilliant, I thought. I thought the Hulk was always the weak character in the series. They've tried several times to do that movie, and they just couldn't get it right. And with his appearance in Avengers, with Mark Ruffalo playing the part, they finally got it right. I would watch a standalone Hulk movie now just because they finally got that character figured out.
I second the motion.
Oh, really? That was your pick too?
Well, no, my pick is actually somebody else, but I like what he's saying, and I'm actually surprised he didn't mention who my pick was, because I know it's one of his favorite characters.
Who?
Chris Evans' is Cap.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
When they said, you know who's going to be Cap, I said, okay, who? Well, the kid who played Sunspot or Firestorm or whatever the Fantastic Four character, Johnny Storm guy, that guy.
Oh, you went through three different characters before you got the right one. Nice job.
Right. So the guy who's going to play Cap is going to be that guy, the guy who's funny and makes all the jokes and does finger guns at the camera and is low rent Ryan Reynolds. He's going to be Cap. Okay.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Low rent Ryan Reynolds?
At the time, he was low rent Ryan Reynolds.
I've never heard that. That's awesome.
Chris Evans, I'm sorry, Ryan, if you're listening, but when it comes to dramatic fare, he is twice the actor Ryan Reynolds is. Chris Evans is, my opinion.
That may be so, but at the time, he didn't do much drama or anything. He did like teen comedies, and he was the funny guy.
Okay. All right. And that worked for you more? Like he surprised you, brought you into his world kind of thing?
Yeah, he surprised me. Like when he showed up as Cap, I was shocked it was him, number one. And number two, I'm like, I'll go anywhere where you tell me, man. Just tell me, let's go. I'm all about you being Cap. I mean, he really is Cap. And I'm so surprised about how it turned out, but I can't imagine anybody else playing that character.
And I think that's why I didn't bring that up, is because Chris Evans was genetically engineered to play that part. He's perfect. And I've gotten so used to him being in that character that it's like, it's not a surprise for me that he's so perfect in it, because I don't think there's another actor in Hollywood who could have done that as well.
It's a hard role when you think about it.
It is.
He's so earnest that, you know, it's kind of like Tony Stark says, it makes me want to punch you in your perfect face, because he is so devout and earnest and good, and everything he does is for the right reasons. And that character can get grating if you don't have the right guy doing it, because we're a cynical world. We don't want somebody being that good. Come on, have some faults. Captain America doesn't have any faults. He just does what he thinks is right all the time, and he lives by that.
Well, one of my daughters brought this up. We were having almost this exact discussion about Captain America after we saw the movie yesterday. And it's interesting to think about that he is the leader of the Avengers. Everybody looks to him when they need an answer. Tony Stark may be like the heart of the Avengers, but whenever they need a plan, like a tactical plan, it's that they always defer to Cap to tell them what to do. Chronologically, age-wise, he is by far the youngest member of the team. He may be 70 years old because he spent whatever it is. But physically, he's what, early 20s? If that. I mean, he had the experiences in World War II that gave him those leadership qualities. But from a physiological standpoint, he's by far the youngest member of the team, which I think is interesting.
That's a good point.
Except for Spider-Man, who doesn't count because he's like still in high school. He's like a junior member. I mean, he counts, but not as like a leader for the team.
You mean Miles Morales?
Everybody defers to Cap's judgment, and he has less life experience than anybody else on the team. I just find that interesting.
That's fair. That's one character I didn't have any doubts about, just because I love Chris Evans and I had faith. My biggest one, Rocket Raccoon.
Yes.
Rocket Raccoon. Oh, yes. Because as soon as I saw that movie, I'm like, no. Okay. For one, outside of Andy Serkis, motion capture work never seemed to work. To have a character that you can actually follow and get behind and actually believe is a real character, near impossible to pull off. I've only seen it pulled off with Gollum and the ape in Planet of the Apes, Caesar. Only time I've ever seen it pulled off. So when I first saw the trailer and Rocket Raccoon's going to be in there, and I didn't know what the hell this was. I'm like, okay, this is going to be the stupidest Marvel movie I've ever heard of in my life. And the entire movie, ever since I've seen Rocket Raccoon, I actually believe there's a raccoon running around, or a rabbit as it were, running around.
That was great.
Just running around, making snide comments and stealing people's legs and everything else that he does. I just can't believe they pulled that off and did it so well. And I'm like, there are so many movies that get building a character, a completely CGI character, wrong, and they freaking nailed it to a T and made people that were completely disingenuous to the whole idea come on board. And that, to me, is my favorite.
I had the exact opposite reaction to Rocket when I saw him in the Guardians trailer. I had no idea what the Guardians of the Galaxy was. I had never even heard of it. Mm-hmm. And I saw the trailer online for the first time, and I was just mesmerized by the whole thing. And I got it on my phone. I downloaded it on YouTube on my phone, and I took it to Vicky, who was in the living room. And I'm like,
Vicky's your wife.
Yeah, Vicky's my wife. And I'm like, you got to watch this trailer. And she goes, what is it? I said, I have absolutely no idea, but it has a raccoon with a machine gun riding a tree. I have to see this movie. I mean, Rocket.
If you tell me any movie that has a machine gun riding raccoon tree thing, I'm in.
Yep, that was me. I'm like, I have no clue even after watching the trailer what this movie is about, but I have to go see it.
But you got to be honest. I mean, John, you love comic books, so I'm sure you probably knew Guardians. Did you think it was going to work as well as it did?
You have to understand a little bit how my brain works sometimes. When somebody tells me that a movie company is going to do this, this, and this, and it just sounds too crazy to work, I'm like, let's see what they do. Especially if it's Marvel. It's like, I'm not going to try to develop feelings for what they're doing, because clearly somebody over there knows what I'm thinking and they want to do what I want. So.
Okay, so you just don't have normal logic like everybody else does. Right.
No, it's just too crazy for me to be like, okay, you know what? If you told me that it was Michael Bay and he's going to give me Rocket Raccoon and Groot, I'm going to be like, no. Groot's going to be speaking in a French accent for no good reason. Someone's going to forget how to speak in Spanish, even though the story probably requires it. And Rocket's going to be voiced by Mark Wahlberg. No.
Oh, just think now. Now I'm going to have that in my brain. What if it would have been Mark Wahlberg? How would that play out?
That actually might have worked, depending on how he played it.
I'm the raccoon doing his job.
Yeah.
Say hello to your mother.
Say hello to your mother, tree.
By the way, you missed an awesome motion capture when you said there were two or three that worked.
Yeah.
Benedict Cumberbatch motion captured Smaug, the dragon.
Yeah, Smaug is really great. That's true.
You know, another character that surprised me was how much I appreciated Ben Kingsley as the Mandarin.
Oh, God, really?
I don't know why, but I love Trevor. I think Trevor's great. I think the fact that they put that spin on the Mandarin like they did was fantastic. I was expecting the Mandarin, one of the most feared comic book villains that the Marvel Universe has. I was expecting this guy with rings that does amazing things, and it's Trevor.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of cool, but it was so not what I wanted while I was watching that movie.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where in hindsight, it's awesome to see Trevor pop out when he finally gets on the wrong end of a gun. But I really wanted like the Mandarin to be the Mandarin. And that just didn't happen when I was watching that movie. So I was a little pissed off at the time. But
and Pepper Potts has the Deus Ex Machina of that movie. And have we seen any more fireball from her since then?
No, they fixed her. Tony talks about that at the end.
Okay.
He tinkered that out of her, I guess.
Whatever.
That's a stretch.
That's what they said.
Yeah, the man fixed the woman. How many women are now furious that sentence was said?
Well, you said it.
You're about to find out
when the emails come in. That is Scott Clark at the Hollywood Outsider.
What do they not do so well? Like, if you had to find a fault, Scott.
Marvel can't science.
What do you mean?
I mean, we've gone from space killing people to Thor basically breathing and talking and having a conversation in space.
No, they actually made that made sense.
Really? Please explain it to me.
Please elaborate.
It made no sense to me whatsoever.
Well, when they bring them, well, this is going into quote unquote spoiler area, but.
Well, don't spoil anything. Is it for Infinity War?
Yes. That's the scene that I referenced.
Then don't mention it until Infinity War. You bring it back. Let's table this.
Yeah.
We'll table that.
That's. Science and some timeline continuity, they keep jumping a little bit in timelines about how long events have taken apart from each other. Mm-hmm. They've screwed that up a couple times, but that's more editing than anything else. There's not much that Marvel does badly. I mean, their casting is perfect. The acting's amazing. The storylines are engaging and great. This is me being picky, but it seems like science is something that they don't do well.
And villains. My pick would be villains for the most.
Yeah.
On average. Obviously, Thanos is great. And then you have a couple others that might have been better. But then you have the Ronins of the world. And I love Guardians of the Galaxy, but that's one of the worst movie villains I've ever encountered. Even with a dance off, he just doesn't work for me in any way, shape, or form. And then you've got, I don't know how many in Iron Man, it's always a freaking robot. I mean, it's a big robot or a multitude of robots. I mean, Iron Man 2 and 3, there was a multitude of robots. And then in the Avengers, there's a bunch of space robots. And then it's like, find a freaking villain that isn't the same damn thing every single time. So when I think of the fault, I think of the villains.
But you bring up the villains later in the show, and I'm going to pick a fight with you later, so I'll wait.
I'm not saying there aren't exceptions.
I think that what we got in the way of villains, now that we're 10 years into this and we got the movie that we just got, I think the villains were kind of on purpose like this, because the villains we got are, yeah, sure, they're scary and stuff like that, but they're also kind of boobs. They're kind of not that big of a deal. They are secondary villains. They're not something that we need to really worry too much about, and it gives us an opportunity to get to know Cap. We get to know the Guardians of the Galaxy a lot better, and there were a lot of them, hence why I think Ronan was like so forgotten, because we had more time with the Guardians than we did with Ronan. The villains were nothing more than a vehicle or a heel against our heroes, and they were nothing more than just a way to tell the hero's story and get us to know them better.
Yeah, and they sucked most of the time. So, I mean, rolling back a couple minutes to what you just said, where you said, and they were scary. No, they weren't ever scary. There's maybe two that I would find scary. Vulture's one of them, and Thanos is one of them. Everybody else is kind of, you know what? I'll give you the Cap, because I really think Winter Soldier has a great concept of how to make a villain bigger than, you know, with Hydra and everything else. That was a really great way to do it. Everybody else has so many weak-ass villains. Thor the Dark World. I don't even know what the villain was in that. It was the Blob, I think is what it was.
The Dark Elves.
Yeah. Whatever. It just, there's so much suck involved.
With one exception. And again, I was going to bring this up later, but I guess we'll do the villain discussion now. Loki was awesome. I'm sorry, but Loki, as flawed as he is, he played it perfectly. He's one of the best cast villains I've ever seen.
Well, you can hold on to your favorite villain, brother.
Okay.
You keep that to your... We got to go through something before we get there. John, what does you find fault with in the MCU?
You know what? I have that question blank. I can't really think of a lot of things. I can't think... Like, with the exception of what was brought up, there's not much that I would really give them a hard time about. And I'm not saying they're perfect. I'm just saying that as far as what I need to poke them with a stick for, it's not worth it.
Yeah, I had to be picky. There's really not much.
I didn't. Villains. Oh, right there.
All right. Right.
So we're not going to chart almost 20 movies. So tell us who your overall favorite hero is in these films and why in particular you connect with that hero, John.
Well, I'm going to – my first choice I know that is going to be chosen by at least
you
by
get
one
choice,
you.
My friend. You get one choice. Well, your overall favorite hero.
Time out.
No, there's no timeouts. One hero.
No.
Yeah.
Here's me leaving the floor open for the hero that I know somebody's going to talk about.
No, you pick your overall favorite hero. That's what you – this is and what I'm that going, is, your favorite.
You got to go first, John. Go ahead. Don't worry about stealing mine.
Yeah.
All right, so that we're not all talking about the same guy, Doctor Strange. I love Doctor Strange. He is by far my second favorite hero.
Okay.
In the MCU. I like his story. I like who he is. I think I identify a lot with the kind of like mental issues that he tends to have. And I like how he works through it all and makes it something that is just magical. I mean, I like him a lot. He's by far my second favorite.
That's cool. We weren't talking about second favorite. Scotch, what were you going to say? Who's your actual favorite?
I almost went with Doctor Strange as my favorite. So
really?
Yeah, he just almost screwed himself by trying to outthink everybody else. Way to go, John. But he's right. I know exactly what he was thinking. My favorite character in the MCU is Cap.
Yeah.
Thank you. He has to be. He is what all of us want to be. When we look in the mirror, that's what all of us would like to see. somebody
I'm pretty
who,
close.
Who, yeah. Okay, go with that.
With my shirt on and the lights off.
He yeah. does the right thing because it's the right thing, not for any other ulterior motive other than this is the right thing to do. And that's – everybody would love to have that conviction and stand by it 100% of the time, and none of us do. So he is – he's basically a perfect human being. And that's what everybody aspires to is Captain America. He's by far my favorite character in the show.
And I will agree.
Well, he's my favorite hero.
Yeah, yeah. I will agree with that as well. And I'm not going to pick a secondary one because I'm a, I can own up to favorite. So my favorite is absolutely Captain America. And to build on what you just said, yes, everything you just said is true. But I also would say his is the only love story and friendships that really work with me in terms of the character mm-hmm. In the universe. His romance with Peggy Carter breaks my heart. Every time he mentions her in any capacity,
yeah,
anything that has to do with Peggy just really melts my heart. His I can do this all day, his resilience, that just melts my heart. His affection for Bucky and I'll do anything for my friends. One life isn't worth giving up. You know, it just everything he does and says is something that connects with me, and that's why he's easily my favorite. Tony's a fun character to watch, but he's never been my favorite.
He's too much of a dick to be a favorite. He literally can't get out of the way of his own ego.
There's a lot of people that are okay with dickish ways.
No. There's a lot of people who would say that's why he's their favorite.
Nope. He's not even in my top five. So,
wow.
Yeah, he's not in my top five either.
He's in Marvel's top five.
Well, that's because they put him in everything. He's making him money, but he's not in my top five favorite characters.
Is not this simpler? Is this not your natural state? It's the unspoken truth of humanity that you crave subjugation. The bright lure of freedom diminishes your life's joy in a mad scramble for power, for identity. You were made to be ruled. In the end, you will always kneel.
Not to men like you.
There are no men like me.
There are always men like you.
Look to your elder people. Let him be an example.
You know, the last time I was in Germany
and saw a man standing above everybody else, we ended up disagreeing.
All right. So you brought up Loki. Is that your favorite villain? Let's do favorite villain.
It was until yesterday.
Really?
Yeah.
Now you can speak to Thanos without spoiling
anything. Yeah, I'm not going to spoil anything when I talk about Thanos. But until now, Thanos has been this weird purple dude in a chair who just kills people for fun and is creepy and kind of evil. And I'm not saying he's not evil, but man, I can relate to him a lot more now after this movie. They gave him depth that he didn't have until now. And we can get into it more later mm-hmm. in the spoiler cast. Circle back to this because there are some things I want to talk right. about. But I think Loki is still my favorite villain, but man, Thanos came really close to topping him off. It worked for me. But Loki is just so batshit crazy in everything that he's in. And he does it so brilliantly that he is by far my favorite villain except for Thanos.
All right, John, what about you? Who's your favorite? Who's your second favorite villain?
my second favorite villain is Hela.
Oh,
really?
From Ragnarok, huh?
Yeah.
Really?
Okay.
For all the wrong reasons, but yeah. We don't really need to get into those, but it works.
Okay. Mine is none of those, actually. My favorite is Vulture from Spider-Man Homecoming. Surprisingly.
That's a good one.
That's actually a really good pick.
Which is funny because I don't love that movie, but I love Michael Keaton in that movie. He has a plot that I understand. His arc, I completely get why he's so mad and why he wants to do what he does. And, you know, then you have the familial connection, which, you know, is really cool, which I'm not going to talk about because it's still kind of newish. But Michael Keaton just owned that role, and he was trying to do good things, but just doing them very badly. And he's a character I really connected to.
I was gonna say he's very layered. He's very much a perfect onion of a character. When you get me to go, hey, I'll get you. I'll buy. What do you want me to buy? Whatever will help. I'll be there with you. I'll do that. Let's buy some stuff off of Vulture. I'm all for it. And those moments where he stops and goes through those thoughts that he goes through and makes the decisions to. I'm trying to be so kind and not spoil anything for that movie on anyone, but the decisions he makes, especially at the very end, you aren't quite sure if he's being good about it or what his motives are to do those things. It really is pretty neat to see that happen with Vulture.
When you can relate to a bad guy and why he's doing what he's doing, why he is the way he is, that makes a really compelling, awesome villain. Which is why I almost supplanted Loki with Thanos after watching Infinity War yesterday. Mm-hmm. I get where he's coming from. He has a point. And that's all I'll say until we get to the spoiler cast. But what Thanos is doing, I get where he's coming from. I do now anyway. And
yeah.
You can relate to it. Mm-hmm. So to me, that was a fascinating part of the movie that I watched yesterday.
I'm just letting you know, for people that have seen Infinity War – Scott just started scaring me a little bit, but all right, we're going to move.
I stopped. I stopped myself.
No, I mean the fact that you are all on board with his plan.
Oh no. Well, I didn't say I was on board with his plan. I said it makes sense.
No, there's cool, a difference. Man. I'm not riding in a plane with you anytime soon. All right.
There's only two of you sitting in that room right now.
Are there any of the
bigger than he is
of the MCU heroes? And I can run, bitch. Are there any of the MCU heroes and villains that you still struggle with? For whatever your reasons. Anybody you still struggle with, John?
I want more Hulk. I need more Hulk in the MCU. I think that he should, if not get his own movie, I think he should just pop up every now and again. Not just Hulk, but I need more Bruce Banner. Even though he showed up in Ragnarok and then he didn't show up in Black Panther, but then we get him again in this movie, I don't think we get enough of Hulk and Banner. I want to see more of that relationship because... It's becoming very clear that they have a relationship now.
Yeah, I'd
agree. Yes.
I think that relationship could be a lot of fun.
I struggle with Thor, honestly.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I love Chris Hemsworth, and I really like Thor. The last couple movies, I haven't liked what they've done with Thor, but I will say in Infinity War that gets changed a little bit. But I didn't like what they did with him in Ragnarok. I really was kind of bummed by that. It really just hit me the wrong way. Outside of him, Black Widow is one where I like Black Widow. I don't need a whole movie from her. They keep talking about they're going to make a movie about her. I don't need that at all. Not even a little bit.
You know what I would watch? I would watch a movie with her and Hawkeye together.
I would do that.
Yes.
If Hawkeye's part of it, yeah.
Their past adventures that they've kind of alluded to and some of the conversations that they've had, that's a movie that I would watch.
We've got a fun back and forth.
Yeah. But
when they're fighting in Civil War and they're making sure the other one's good. Hey, we're still good after this, right?
Yeah, that was awesome.
That was.
And she's obviously a big part of his life hanging out at the house because the kids know her as Uncle Nat and – I think there's a relationship there, a friendship that I would love to see in a standalone movie. But mm-hmm. either one of them alone, I don't think a solo movie is going to work. But as a pair, I think they could pull it off.
I'd add Ronan to the I really can't stand him list. I'll mention him at every chance I can because I really hate Ronan as a character.
The one that I'm going to mention is probably going to shock you guys. War Machine needs to be permanently deployed off screen.
I agree.
I am tired of that character. I don't like him. I think his banter.
Not a Don Cheadle fan?
It's not Don Cheadle, it's the character. When Terrence Howard did it, I didn't like it then either. I think he's a secondary character that's gotten way too much screen time, and I'm just not a fan. It feels forced, like they have to throw him in there because mm-hmm. he's Tony's buddy, and I just don't. Every time he's on screen, I'm kind of like, oh, this guy again.
You know, I'm the same way because, I mean, every time they throw Bucky on there, you'd think it'd be the same thing, but nope. I like Bucky and Rogers. They feel like real friends.
Yes.
I never feel like. I mean, they're trying to be quippy and banter and stuff, and it just never works for me.
Right, and that's exactly my problem with it. The friendship between Bucky and Steve feels very real, and I like Bucky. He's grown on me in every movie he's been in to the point where I love his character now. I have never liked War Machine. I liked him when he was just at the Pentagon talking to Tony on the phone as like his inside guy. That was great. Mm-hmm. As soon as they gave him a suit and turned him into a real character of War Machine, I was done at that point. I don't like that character at all.
Hmm. I was totally against you on this, but now after listening to all your points, you have a good, strong point. I think he can go ahead and just screw himself right off the screen now.
Wow.
All cool. Right. Well, what is your, and John, I swear to God, overall favorite, favorite MCU film and one single moment from all of the MCU, not including Infinity War. So overall favorite film and single moment in the MCU. Scott?
I've been on the show, I think this is like my sixth or seventh time. This is the hardest question you've ever asked me.
Seriously?
Yeah, because they're so good, and there are so many moments in these movies that are so good. I could tick off 10 off the top of my head that could interchange as for my top spot, mm-hmm. depending on what kind of mood I'm in. And I'm talking about moments in the films. My favorite film is pretty much locked in as the original Avengers. I think that was everything I wanted to see in a superhero movie done on screen for the first time. And we keep getting better and they keep expanding upon that, but you never get that, oh my God, I get to see them all at once for the first time. To me, that was the epitome of this is where this series hit its high mark, I think, was with the very first Avengers. For favorite moments, this is the one where there are 10 or 12 that I could just bounce around depending on what kind of mood I'm in. But the one
Look who has so many to choose from now.
But, John, the one that I keep coming back to that just stands out as the most heroic moment for me in any of these movies is the old man who stands up to Loki in Germany.
Mm.
I absolutely fell in love with that character, and he's only on screen for like 10 seconds, but that dude is the bravest person in the universe, and I love it.
There will always be men like you.
Yeah, he's just this old German guy who probably lived through the Nazis and said, I'm not doing this again. Mm-hmm. I know this is going to cost me my life, but I'm going to tell this guy exactly what I think of him. I don't have any superpowers. I don't have Tony Stark's toys. I'm just an old man in a tan jacket going to tell this guy he's an asshole. I thought that was the defining moment of everything about this series and why we love it. Mm-hmm. It brings out the best in everybody. And I think that dude is just by far the bravest character in any of these movies. So that's my favorite moment.
All right, John, what about you? Favorite film? I don't care if it's the same one. and favorite moment?
Favorite film is Cap, the first Avenger.
Okay.
Yeah, that would have been my toss-up.
As much as I enjoy all the other movies, that's the one that I come back to the most. That's the one that if I'm in a bad mood, I'll sit down and watch. If it's raining outside, I'll sit down and watch. If I just don't feel like watching something that I need to watch, I will watch that instead. It is just like chicken soup. It really is. I adore the movie. I adore the road that Steve Rogers goes on. Everything about that movie is great. My favorite moment has to be the Cap, Bucky, Iron Man fight in Civil War.
Mm.
For no other reason than, and it's not even like the entire fight, but that fight, that part of the fight where they're trading the shield back and forth and fighting Iron Man, that is just, as far as visually speaking, straight out of a comic book. It's as if we don't really need to think about how to make the scene, right? Because we have 15 different iterations of this in the comics. Let's just pick one of those. And I really loved seeing that.
That's a good one.
What I love the most about that scene, and out of that whole fight, that like 2 or 3 seconds where they're bouncing the shield back and forth to each other, that directly alludes to where the Captain America comic goes in the comics. Mm-hmm. And I saw that and I was like, oh, that's awesome, because they're using the shield in exactly the same way. And I'm fairly certain that that was entirely intentional on the part of Marvel. It was great. That's easily in my top five.
I'm pretty sure everything they do is intentional.
But that was great. John's right. That's a great scene.
That is a great scene. Mm-hmm. My overall favorite movie is The Avengers. It's I think Scott already talked about it, but as much as I love First Avenger and Guardians, actually, those two would be pretty close in together. The Avengers did something I did not think would be possible, bringing all those characters together, making it just a fun movie, you know, with Hulk actually becoming the Hulk we've always wanted to see, throwing Thor around and everything else he does in that movie, you know, puny god, all that stuff in one movie, and you made it work, and every character gets their screen time, I thought was amazing. So that is still, to this day, my favorite superhero movie. You know, followed Dark Knight very, very, very close, but that's my favorite superhero. Now, my favorite moment all time across 19 films. Actually, 19 films. You can throw Infinity War in there. Won't matter. I had a date as my favorite moment of all the movies, because I've never cried in a Marvel movie. Still haven't, except for that one moment, because that was just, I love that relationship. I love Peggy and Steve, and to hear that's the first thing he thinks of when he gets back in the world is, I just wanted to see her. That's all I wanted. I just wanted to see her. And it makes me cry every time I watch it. To this day, when I rewatch that movie, that one scene will make me cry.
I agree. I mean, that's a phenomenal scene. When you were talking about the Thor and Hulk, I thought you were going to do what my second favorite one is, which is when they come down off that giant whale thing and Hulk just punches Thor out of the picture for no reason. I don't think I've ever laughed that hard in a movie theater. The first time I saw that, I almost fell out of my chair. I was laughing so hard. So I thought that's where you were going to go.
Yeah. I said Thor earlier. I meant Hulk was throwing Loki around. Right. That's what it was.
Yeah.
That was good, too.
My bad. Because everybody's already written a letter at this point because they heard it. And they're like, no, no, no. That was Loki. You got to correct it.
Well, that's not true, because you could have been talking about earlier in the movie where he beats Thor's ass when they're on the carrier.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
That's what you meant.
Exactly. I'm going to go back and redact what I just said, because that's exactly what I meant. My goodness. All right, so this is one's a little bit more personal. What's your favorite personal memory of watching any MCU movie? And it can be either at home or in the theater. Just your favorite personal memory, John.
All right, so my second favorite personal memory.
And there's our running joke for this show.
Yeah, watch him beat it into the ground.
Scott's leaving, by the way. All right,
so when I was watching Winter Soldier for the first time in the theater, having a background of understanding who Winter Soldier was and Captain and everything like that, so I wasn't really surprised about a lot of things that happened. However, there's a woman sitting right behind me. When it was revealed who Winter Soldier was, it was like this, and all of a sudden you hear, it's his friend. I wanted to be that woman so much, just to have that magical feeling of like that reveal hitting somebody like that so hard. Like, I loved it. I adored it. I thought it was great. That's my favorite memory.
I have a lot of memories of watching these movies with my family. First time I saw Avengers in the theater was on vacation with my kids down at Universal Studios, which is a great place to see, you know, a movie for the first time. But I think my favorite memory of all of this, it goes back to seeing the first Guardians of the Galaxy in the theater for the first time. I got to be a part of the whole experience of that, because Scott and I got in my car and drove like 100 miles to the nearest really big IMAX theater. And we saw it Thursday, 7 o'clock, very first showing. And all the other hosts of the show saw it at the same time. And Scott and I just had a blast with it. We were sitting right in the middle of the theater. We had perfect seats for IMAX. And when we came out, you all started texting each other immediately, because you all saw it at exactly the same time. And I got to be a part of those conversations from Scott's side. And everybody was just so blown away by that movie that I think that's being a part of that for this show and seeing a movie that I had high expectations but no knowledge about at all. I had no idea who those characters were. All I knew is that they just put out a fabulous trailer. To me, that was the best experience I had watching these movies.
Those are all good. Those are all good. I remember that very clearly, and that was a really special moment, because especially with Justin is no longer here, and you know, Brian, and we were all four of us were kind of in that groove, and which really makes me sad, because Justin would love Infinity War.
Really, yeah,
he would love Infinity War.
This would have been the pinnacle of the series for him, I think.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. My favorite moment would be going back to the first Avenger. When I saw it in the theater, and at the very end, after I had a date, which I already talked about, and I'm crying like a stupid fool, and a lady in front of me was getting up to leave because the movie was over and the credits were rolling, and I'm just bawling, and she just looked back at me and said, "You're crying over Captain America?" And I went, "No, I'm crying over Peggy." And she just nodded and she goes, "Oh, I get that." I was like, "Okay. All right. So get out of here, lady." And you're going to miss the sting of credit, too.
Yeah, right.
So it was very, very funny. But it would have actually been, you know, that would be my second favorite memory, because my first was definitely the Guardians one. But since Scott already alluded to it, you know, that's what we do here.
Well, if we're doing second favorites,
no,
because
we're not.
John.
Just kidding.
Oh, let me,
but I mean, you kind of.
You guys are trying to say something. I don't know what it is.
My kids are crazy for Bucky. We've talked about Bucky so much over this favorite segment here that I think a lot of us really like that character. To my kids, Bucky is the hero of Winter Soldier. Hmm. It's not Cap. They loved Bucky's character, and they've loved it ever since. Because he's Steve. He's like the other half of Steve. They've been best friends for so long. To get to see that relationship come back together, my girls absolutely love that character. And that's thinking about them seeing Winter Soldier for the first time and realizing that Bucky wasn't dead and now he's the Winter Soldier was like, I got to have that same moment that John was talking about, where I got to see somebody make that connection and go, oh, that's so cool. So they've loved Bucky's character ever since then.
And it was cool. We got to see it with John and the Petersons came into town. Stephen Amy Peterson came into town and John was here and we all went and saw Thor Ragnarok. I wish Thor, that was a fun memory, except Thor Ragnarok I didn't love as much as other people. So the movie is so much, not so much, but that was a fun memory. And now we have our listener top. We polled everybody in our Facebook group and said, what are your favorite Marvel films, not including Infinity War? Because, you know, I am a big fan of right after a Marvel movie comes out, it's everybody's favorite. It feels to be, you know, it seems to be that's what everybody does. Oh, that one's my favorite. Black Panther's my favorite. You know, Spider-Man Homecoming's my favorite. Yeah, all right. Let it settle and then see where you sit. So now we have it what people are settled, and here's what they thought their top 10 favorite MCU films are. Are you guys ready for what listeners think?
Sure.
Whatever.
All right. Number 10, Doctor Strange. Number 9, Captain America, the First Avenger. Well, this list is already wrong.
Yes, it is.
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is number 8. I understand that. That's probably because of Kurt Russell. Number 7 is Black Panther. Number 6 is Captain America, Civil War. Number 5 is Thor Ragnarok. What?
What?
Number 4 okay. is Iron Man. Number 3 is The Avengers. Number 2 is Captain America, Winter Soldier. And this is by a hefty margin, the number one movie in the MCU, Guardians of the Galaxy.
There was an idea to bring together a group of remarkable people to see if we could become something more. So when they needed us, we could fight the battles
that they never could.
Okay, and like I told you at the top of the show, we picked topics or sections from the biggest four episodes. And actually, one of the biggest, I wasn't even on. John wasn't on. It was the ladies episode. It was the Lady Ho episode. And it was from Surviving in a Dystopian Universe was the entire episode. And we picked a section of that, which is where they talk about trailers and gender swapping in film. So this is from episode 312. I hope you guys check it out. And if I didn't mention the Building a Marvel Universe, that was 310. We also have an Avengers Infinity War spoiler cast on that one too. But this one is from episode 312. I think you guys are really going to enjoy this because they have a different take on gender swapping and one I think that might be unexpected. And on that episode, I should say, Amanda Sink is leading it and she actually joined us since then as a permanent host, as well as Courtney Davenport and Angela Wallach. So be sure to check this out. Take a listen.
So moving on from the beautiful Avengers, because you can't really go wrong with anybody who's an Avengers, I want to talk about something that relates still to the Avengers, which is, in general, what is considered a spoiler and what isn't, and how trailers are being produced anymore. The reason I want to talk about this is because I know there's a ton of controversy about it. I think the guys have talked about it before too, so this is just going to be a different perspective. And I just want to know what you ladies think. What do you consider to be a spoiler for you? And are you okay watching the trailers that are coming out for these big blockbusters, like movies in the MCU?
For me, spoilers and trailers aren't really new. I did a little bit of research and way back, even the movie Carrie from the 1970s spoiled the final scene in the trailer, just in case you haven't seen Carrie and just in case you haven't seen the trailer, I won't tell you what it is, but
you should know.
You should know. I mean, by all rights, if you're a movie fan, you really should know, but that's okay. I won't spoil it, but there is a pivotal scene. It's an iconic scene. When you think about the movie Carrie, you usually think about this. And it was apparently in the trailer. So this thing about trailers spoiling movies isn't really new. It's so much easier to get spoiled on movies nowadays, obviously, because you don't just open up the newspaper and read a tiny little paragraph about what the movie's like. You see everybody talking about it on Facebook, on social media, on the internet, on reviews, everywhere. So it's harder to avoid spoilers. But yeah, it's disappointing when something is in the trailer. To me, a lot of times the trailer gets my attention, but I don't really truly remember every single thing in the trailer. So once I eventually see the movie, I probably didn't remember that it spoiled me. Unless it's a casting or something where somebody crazy shows up. I can't remember, honestly, for Fantastic Beasts, did they show or tell people that Johnny Depp was in it? They did, didn't they?
I'm trying to remember. I mean, I knew, but I'm an, you know, geek who read stuff about it, but I don't remember if he was actually in the trailer.
Yeah, because I think that could be considered a little bit of a spoiler because he didn't you didn't see who he was until the very end. And you know, that's disappointing. I don't think they spoiled surprise casting for Tropic Thunder because, well, you know, Tom Cruise was in that movie and it was so funny. And I don't remember seeing anything about him in any trailers. But I think that's when I get disappointed is if you're going to have like an amazing surprise casting. I don't want to see it in the trailer. And I hate it when all the funniest parts of the movie are in the trailer, too. Yeah. That really bothers me a lot. Or when you watch a trailer and you say, I feel like I've just seen every joke that's in there. That's disappointing as well.
Or you've seen the whole movie.
Right.
Like, I've had that happen quite a few times. I'm like, oh, okay, well, I know the whole movie. So what's the point?
So for me, trailers seem to be giving away more of the story. The intent is to get you interested in the movie. And I feel like when you're showing a 4-minute clip of encompassing all of the coolest parts of the movie, it's not necessarily a spoiler to me because I'm with you, Courtney, on the casting. That makes it a spoiler for me. If you're going to have something or someone in there that is really supposed to blow our minds when we see it, Thor Ragnarok, I'm sorry, but I know Hulk was a big movie draw interest sort of thing. Like, everybody was interested in that. But for me, that took away the moment when it actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
If your trailer takes away from that moment, it's not a spoiler necessarily, but it does damage the impact that your film has. And so I personally am trying to, if it's a movie that I've not heard about or I'm not sure if I'm interested in, I'll certainly watch the trailer and I'll probably watch the first trailer for any big blockbuster. But for movies that are in the MCU or that are just those big movies, I'm not going to watch second, thirds, fourths because I'm already interested. There's no point in me getting to know even more about the movie. And it seems like they give more and more away with each trailer that they produce. And it's not necessarily that it is a spoiler because for me, it has to spoil something that's pivotal in the movie, or like you guys said, the casting. It has to be something that's very drastic for it to be a spoiler. But I still don't need to know all of the details of the movie. That's why I'm going to the theater. But for some reason, they advertise a ton in these multitude of trailers, and we've gotten away from teasers. We've gotten away from a lot of that. So it just becomes, here's a bunch of clips from the movie that we're just going to put together to get you excited. But then for me, when I see it, I remember the trailer. So I'm like, oh, this is that scene. Okay. And it just kind of takes away that moment for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty much like in total agreement with you, Amanda. Like that was my thoughts too, is that especially for movies like Star Wars, Avengers, you know, big movies that you already know you have a huge following. You already know half the world is going to go see it. I don't need 40 trailers. It's like one cool trailer just to get the excitement going. That's all I need. So I've definitely taken the approach of trying to avoid any additional trailers now. It's obviously trickier when you go to the movie theaters, but the sheer amount of trailers that we see now before movies is astounding. Like I actually, when I went and saw Super Troopers 2 a couple weeks ago, we had 24 minutes worth of trailers before the movie started.
Whoa.
24 minutes. I timed it. I was like, this is the most insane amount of trailers. And I'm like, really? For Super Troopers 2? It was just so bizarre. So I think that, I mean, in regards to what a spoiler is, I think we all agree it's the same things. Like, you know, if something's like integral to the plot or if it's a special scene. But it's funny that you brought up Thor Ragnarok, Amanda, because that's exactly what I was thinking. I know some people, again, say like they needed Hulk to sell it. I don't think they did, personally. I think it's Marvel. It was going to be golden no matter what. But it definitely ruined the impact of that scene. I mean, it still was fun. Don't get me wrong, I love Thor Ragnarok, but it would have been so much more fun had we no idea that, you know, the Hulk was going to come rushing out of that door.
And you knew exactly what scene it was going to take place in. It's not even that you knew Hulk was going to be there. You knew that in that moment, when he opens up and he walks out there, who his opponent is going to be, because they showed the scene, basically. I mean, you lost some of the dialogue and introduction, but at the same time, you really knew the exact placement. Because when I saw this happen, I was like, oh, this is where Hulk is going to come in. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of takes away like a really impactful moment. I feel like I don't understand. Does it really outweigh the cons to just say, oh, okay, well, we're going to have Hulk, so that'll draw in a whole lot more people, versus kind of ruining that moment for your viewers? Mm-hmm. And it's just like a personal opinion thing.
Yeah, and it's like, you could have, like, to your point there, too, they could have shown that Hulk was going to be in this movie if that's what they really wanted, but they didn't need to show his introduction.
Yeah.
Like, that, it just totally, you just imagine how much more of a laughter, like, that would have caused had nobody known.
Exactly.
You know, that would have just been a fabulous movie moment, but unfortunately, I would say probably, like, 95% of the people that were in there probably already knew that was going to happen. So
with any one of these movies in the Marvel universe now, instead of a trailer with cuts of scenes in the movies, they should just run down like a police lineup of their faces in a line with some loud rock music playing in the background and just a stamp that says, you know, Iron Man 16, you know, you're going to see it.
Date. That would actually be a funny trailer. I would like that.
That would, you know, that is actually pretty brilliant. I say that in jest, but I also say that to be, you know, that would be funny. Or if people sort of like South Parked the trailer or something, or did it with claymation, or just took something completely different, not movie clips, but did something way out of the box, would be really funny.
Kind of like Deadpool 2.
Yeah.
Like all of those crazy trailers that have nothing to do with the movie, or just like crazy bizarre.
Remind us why we like the first one. Remind us why we're going to go see the second one. And that's enough, honestly.
Tell me the date. I'll be there.
Yeah. I mean, these bigger movies, you don't need to have all the clips there. You just don't. So, yeah.
So one of the reasons that I wanted to bring this up is because there was a lot of controversy about the Infinity War trailers, because some of the content that's in the trailers isn't even in the movie. Does that bother you guys?
Sort of. It happens. It seems to happen a lot. Like, I know it happened quite a bit in the most recent Star Wars films. But at the same time, a lot of the times, from what I'm understanding, these movies are still being edited. So it's when they're making the trailers, they've got all this stuff, but they don't know what's going to make the final cut. So I think it's just, unfortunately, sometimes it could happen. But maybe that's what they should do. They should just do a bunch of stuff that's not in the movie. And then you're like, oh, none of this was in the movie, but at least nothing got spoiled for me.
Yeah, I was just thinking we're trying to have it both ways here. We don't want to see things that are in the movie. We don't want to see things that aren't in the movie. But it didn't even occur to me that maybe the final edit of the film hasn't been done when the trailer comes out. You're right about that. I mean, it depends on when they're trying. If they're prepping a trailer for some con that and it's just not even coming out until Christmas time, then yeah, you are probably not done with the final edit of the film.
And I'm fine with that being part of the trailers. I think it would be cool, because I would much rather have them give me content that I have no I can't place it in the movie at all, versus giving me something that's really pivotal and important to the film. But it would be cool if they still gave you those pieces. So if they still included them as like an after the credits scene, or like on the special features for a Blu-ray or something, like I would be really interested in that. And I think I would be more inclined to buy the movie pretty quickly. Then a lot of times I sit and wait on it, because I know if there's going to be multiples of them, I would rather just see if I'm going to get the whole trilogy as a set versus just the individuals building up. But that would be, that would give me a reason and a desire to buy the movie for more than just rewatching it if they included those scenes and I knew they were going to be in there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really just, it is us wanting to have it both ways, have our cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
Just remind us the movie's coming out. And we'll, you know, if it's a major blockbuster, or it's a sequel, you know, we're going to go see it.
I'm like, Avengers 2, they told us the date. That's all I care about. I got the date next year. I'm good. You don't need to show me anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, exactly. I will be there.
And there used to be a real art to teasers, and I miss that. Mm-hmm. I miss teasers. I wish they'd come back.
I think that 13 Reasons Why did a decent teaser trailer. They did a decent teaser for their trailer where they didn't really show anything significant about the new season for season 2, but they did get my interest peaked and I was like, oh great, we have a date now. Like, that's really what a teaser should be. And then the trailer didn't even give away too much, and that's for a TV show. So if a TV mm-hmm. show can pull it off, if Netflix can pull it off, then I think that giant, you know, mass producing studios would be able to pull that off too.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So another controversial, it's not, I don't know, is it really controversial? But there's a lot of movies that are being remade and they're swapping genders. It is very controversial, let's be honest. So thinking mm-hmm. about like Ghostbusters, Ocean's 8, and Spielberg even suggested someday that we would have an Indiana Joanne. Some fans are screaming about this and others really like the idea. What do you guys think about this being a new trend?
I've thought about this and I'm really of two minds on this topic. So while I personally don't see the need to make an Indiana like Joan movie, I think for Indiana Jones specifically, if they want to create a female lead, then I think they should just make her a new character and launch it off from the established storyline. I don't think that they need to take a character that's already, you know, established and switch the gender. It just doesn't really make sense to me.
Maybe they did. She's called Lara Croft.
Well, that's what I was thinking. And I know people say that, but I'm like, I don't really like I don't like Lara Croft. Sorry, what? Amanda. So like, I get them wanting to have like a fun, spirited adventurer archaeologist lady, but I'm like, just spin it off. Like, there's no reason that we can't introduce a new character from the movies. I'm totally on board for that. And like, I think in some ways we're just overdoing remaking anything and everything from our past in general. So whether it's, you know, swapping genders or what, we're just remaking a lot of stuff. But on the other side, I cannot tell you how moved I was when there was a female Ghostbusters movie. I mean, as a kid from the 80s, this was like mind-blowing for me. I actually teared up in the movie theater. It hit me on such like a personal level of these characters that I've grown up with. I mean, I watched the movies, I watched the cartoons, and to see females in the role of a Ghostbusters busting those ghosties, I was like the happiest person. I mean, seriously, really, really moved. So I see the benefit of it too. I just think that they're more successful with like, say, the Ghostbusters movie and the new Ocean's 8, where they're creating new characters based on that, like those worlds. They're not necessarily like, you know, recasting Danny Ocean. They're not recasting mm-hmm. Venkman. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's a world that we're familiar with and they're introducing female characters, which obviously I'm always all about, but they're not necessarily having to make them like, they're just not swapping genders. Quickly, if that makes sense. So I think you're more successful with Ocean's 8. And I think they should have been more successful with Ghostbusters, but there's stupid, jerky nerds out there who poo-pooed on it before it even got a shot. So it's tough. Like, I'm on both. Like, obviously, I want more diversity out there in roles, for whether it be different genders, more, you know, like swapping genders, or, you know, swapping, you know, or creating more characters with like different ethnicities, or, you know, even sexual orientation, just different things like that. More representation, I think, is always a good thing. But I don't need an Indiana Jones. Sorry, Spielberg.
I'm also just back to the Lara Croft thing. Mm-hmm. Angela, you're a heartbreaker, dream maker. I'm very sad about
this.
It's
okay. I mean, I haven't seen the new one, so I'll give you that. I haven't seen the new one. And I'm not the biggest Angelina Jolie fan in general. Mm-hmm. And I've played a little bit of the video games. But I mean, I really like, I like, I want the humorous, like, archaeologist explorer. I think, like, that's just my preference.
Yeah.
So
if you haven't seen the new one, which you said you didn't, you should check it out because it's off, like, a totally different – it's based off the new games versus the old, like, Sony games. And it follows it pretty well, and I think it nailed it really well. And so did Alicia Vikander. Is that how you say her name? I said Joanne earlier, so I don't know how to do pronunciations, obviously. But, yeah, so that one is a good one. I am totally with you on everything else that you said, where recasting is the same characters is not to the benefit of – even for the people who are getting that representation – You're just making other people mad, like the legitimate fan base, instead of using that same universe and spinning it off. I mean, I feel like that's what Fantastic Beasts is doing. Obviously they're following the story and everything too. There's separate books, but if you look at it just from a film perspective, it's still set in the Harry Potter universe, but you're not taking away the beauty and sanctity of Harry Potter by recasting those characters and making them, you know, just to swap the gender or create more ethnic representation.
To me it depends on the property. I think each property should be taken as a separate entity. Like, I made a note about, I think a gender swap would be really interesting for Mission Impossible, but it doesn't mean that Ethan Hunt has to be replaced. It could mean the character played by Ferguson could go on and have her own, you know, series of movies. Mm-hmm. What I think we should ask ourselves, which will be an interesting question, is we're talking a lot about gender swap when it goes from male to female.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask this too.
But when we talk about gender swap from female to male, which is what is supposed to happen with the Splash remake, I sometimes feel differently, and that makes me want to analyze my feelings and thoughts because... You know, I get all excited when you're going to make something female, but why wouldn't I feel the same way when you're going to make something male?
Hmm. Yeah, I think unfortunately, like, the reality is there wasn't as many, and there hasn't in the past been as many great characters for females. And, like, that's just real. That's honest. It sucks. So I think we're just like, don't take away. We need everything we've got. At least that's what I like to think. I know, like, the other one that you just, since you mentioned Splash, I'm like, Overboard.
Oh, yeah.
Even though she technically, I mean, she swapped, you know, the roles around there or whatever. Yeah, you're right. It's kind of jerky, though, to be like, yeah, swap the males to the females, but don't do it the other way. That's not cool. So I definitely think, like, we've got to kind of make sure, like, representation, like, is equal all the way around.
Right. We have to sort of analyze our thoughts and motivations here. And then, is this just a natural progression from the fact that we're remaking nearly everything? So now we're not just remaking it. Now we're remaking it and switching the genders. Next, maybe we'll be remaking it and casting puppies and cats. I don't know. That's just a natural progression to us needing to have some new ideas, basically. And what you had said before about, instead of using the Indiana Jones universe, which we love, let's create a new universe with a lady archaeologist adventurer who's wisecracking and, you know, can outrun a boulder. That's fine. We could do that too. We have room enough in our hearts for all of these things.
And I'm also hoping that when that time comes that original female hits will start to come out, and there will be more focus on creating those really powerful and impactful female leads, that it won't be about discrediting men. Because I feel like a lot of times feminism gets mistaken for women are more important, or we need to focus solely on women. Obviously, that's not what feminism actually is. It's about creating an equal base for everyone. And so I would hope that we could create universes for men where they don't have to always be the strong character who never shows any emotions and he's so hard to open up. Like, we could create a universe where they're able to be emotional and they're able to be still strong individuals. And so I would like to see more representation on both sides, but just because you're trying to get representation for one entity, I guess, doesn't necessarily mean that you don't care about the rest of it. And so if you look at it from that perspective and if you have that mindset, I feel like it differs a lot from, no, I don't want to see my original cast completely revamped with the same story, the same people, with just a different gender. Because I think we're all in agreement that we're not really on board with that male or female swap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want the original stories. But for women, we haven't had that representation for originals. And so maybe it is just because there are a ton of remakes that this is the easiest way to get female representation in, is mm-hmm. to start easing it in by doing the remakes. Do I totally agree with that? Not necessarily, but I wonder if that's maybe where the motive is coming from. This is the easiest way for them to get that placement going.
Well, and everybody's awesome. Trying to put their new spin on everything. You know, the easiest way to do that lately has been switch the genders.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a lazy trope right now. Like, let's just swap.
And isn't that funny that's where we are? Mm-hmm. You know, 15 years ago, we weren't here. You know, now we call that the lazy trope of just switching the genders. Like mm-hmm. I said, next time it'll be, let's cast our dogs and cats. Mm-hmm. Or let's just do everything with robots or, you know, leaves on the ground. I don't know. Who knows what's coming, but it would be nice if we had their own stories and don't have to, you know, it's interesting to see a gender swap every so often. I'm with you on the Ghostbusters movie. I loved it. I was super excited about it. The cast really lit me up mm-hmm. and I loved that movie. That was my favorite experience at the theater that year. It was just great. So, you know, sometimes it's fun to see, but we also want our own universes too, and things that were our own, like Wonder Woman, who was always Wonder Woman right from the beginning.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to Captain Marvel too. I'm not going to lie. Yes. Like,
wholeheartedly.
That's my number one, like, excited for movie in the next, like, year or so.
Brie is just going to knock that out of the park. She is. I 100% believe that. I know it.
You know, I actually just watched Kong Skull Island just mm-hmm. this week. And yeah, I was reminded about how fantastic she is. I'm super pumped about that too.
She was in the United States of Terra and also obviously she was in The Room. Well, not The Room. She was in Room, the movie. There's a very, very distinct difference there. But her performances have always, she's gotten into so many different types of character performances. And I feel like she's just always taken every role that she's given. And just the magnitude that she performed is just beyond me. And so I cannot wait to see what she does for a female character in the MCU.
Woo-woo.
What?
All right, now we come to our last one. And this is where Sean Fuller from the Horribly Awkward podcast manages to have a little fun with our topic, because I'm not quite sure he understood what our topic was. It's actually a really fun section. This is from episode 313. This is Sean Fuller, again, from the Horribly Awkward podcast. It's from Franchises That Never Happened, as well as there's a Deadpool 2 spoiler cast on that episode if you want to hear the full thing. All right, here we go. All right, our From the Outside In topic, moving right along. In May, the classic film Willow, speaking of Ron Howard, will turn 30 years old. It already did turn 30 years old. It was one of those fantasy films that was supposed to spawn a series of films. That's what it was meant to do. And then it was released, and it didn't do so well, or barely registered. Whatever the reason, no more movies, no franchise, one and done. So as we head full steam in the summer season, because that's kind of what Memorial Day signifies, and all of the sequels, the prequels, the spinoffs, and everything we're going to get, let's first look at those little engines that could have but didn't. The franchises that never happened. The ones we really wanted, but never came to fruition. So we're all film fans here, right? We all like movies?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Bring me back, Willow!
Val Kilmer was so cool in that movie. Have you ever been legitimately crushed when a movie you loved that you knew would make a great franchise didn't connect with everybody else? Sean?
You know, I'm not going to say super crushed, but I really did love Sucker Punch, and I wish they would have done more with that movie. I thought that movie was a lot of fun. One of the first movies I saw on the IMAX. I don't know if it was supposed to have anything planned after just the one movie, but that was I could go for more stuff like that visually and just fun and weird and also dark at the same time. I really like Sucker Punch a lot. And Ghostbusters. I like the new Ghostbusters with the women.
Me too.
Guys, yeah, I want more too. Ghostbusters. I love Kristen Wiig. That's still my crush, so I was a little disappointed that, you know, people didn't like it. And I actually went, everybody I went with had a good time. And then everyone's like, it sucks. You can't like that because it sucked. I'm like, well, I had a good time, so shut up.
Good for you.
I like the idea of Sucker Punch getting a franchise out of it. I actually love that movie. I love the visuals behind it. Sure, people can say every little negative thing about it, but I think it's just fine. I think it's a fun, awesome movie, and it's just beautiful to look at. So I think it's okay. Mine was actually Tron Legacy. I couldn't believe nobody picked up on that. I couldn't believe that nobody loved that as much as I did. I just, again, something that I was just mesmerized with on screen, and I enjoyed what they could have, where they could have taken it. And yeah, I had so many hopes and dreams for where that was going to go. And it just fizzled out and didn't do anything. And I was just shocked.
You know, that's one that really weirded me out, because it made a decent amount of money. I think it cost too much to make. It made like $170 million, $300 million worldwide, something like that. It's not a flop by any means, but for whatever reason, they didn't consider it jump on the quick train of Richville with that movie, or like a series, yeah, or anything else.
I mean, they must have filmed it in a green like warehouse. That's all they had to do.
Well, I'm sure there's more to it. It's not like they just go to a green warehouse and then bam, Tron 3.
And actually, gross revenue enough? Was 400 yep. million. Is that
green? How green can we make it, Jim? Greener.
Like, dude, you're wearing a green shirt. This does not work. You have like no torso right now. Oh, I don't know. You know.
I just looked it up. It gross revenue was $400 million.
What? Yeah. See, so it did really well worldwide. I mean, but I think it cost like $200 million to make. That was the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good one. Mine, the one that really crushed me, I remember, and you guys, we were kind of already talking about it, but I remember when Universal scooped up Firefly to make it Serenity. It was like Christmas morning to me. Christmas morning. I absolutely loved that series. So when the film was released, I remember it just like it was yesterday. And it was like 13 years ago, but it feels like yesterday. I told everybody I knew that we had to go see it. I supported the movie. I bought so much memorabilia. It was ridiculous. I don't remember what else. I did so much to try to, I don't know, grassroots that promotion and just run and make everybody go see it. I had a big group that went and everything. And then I absolutely loved it. I thought it was great. I thought they nailed everything. This was the Han Solo movie everybody really wanted, but they just didn't know about it, apparently. Because nobody went and saw it. It had a horrible release date, bad marketing, one of the worst posters I've ever seen, and ultimately it flopped. Killed the chance of a franchise forever. And I'm still sad. To this day, I put that movie in and I cry.
You know, I was on vacation from 2002 to 2007, so I missed out on everything in there. I'm not sure. I honestly did. It's not even a joke. And it's weird how many times I hear that brought up. So I feel like I know that. But I haven't seen it, but I feel like I know Firefly and what was the movie called again?
Serenity.
Serenity.
Serenity. I feel like I know those, and I just constantly, I'm listening to podcasts, it just constantly gets brought up. So I feel like, Aaron, you're definitely not alone.
You know, I was on a different kind of vacation between 2002 and 2007, and it somehow missed me too. But when I did get introduced to the show, it was something I instantly fell in love with. But I got introduced to the show when it was released on Blu-ray or DVD or something. And that's how I initially fell in love with it. And then I got to watch the movie on DVD. And yeah, I loved them both, but it was something that between 2002 and 2007, I was just not checked into the world for different reasons.
Wasn't it the kind of movie that you would expect Han Solo to be had Han Solo had a movie?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Before this, I mean.
And I love that girl who looks like an actual android. Was Summer Glau.
Summer Glau.
She just looks like an actual robot. Her and that Anna Taylor-Joy girl. It must be like sister androids.
Oh, big eyes?
Just they just look like robots.
Yes, it's the big eyes. They're look the like test anime
robots
dolls.
For us to get used to robots. They're going to throw them in there. Like, let's make this one an actor, you know, to get robots. People used to robots. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just making sure you said robots at least one more time.
Robots.
Row
your bot. Okay. Done.
Well done. Have there been any that you were so excited for, then you caught it and praise the gods that you knew you never have to live through another one? Like when you were happy they didn't make a franchise?
The one that comes to mind the most is actually Superman Returns. He's one of my favorite characters on the big screen. And when Superman Returns happened, it didn't have the gravitas of Christopher Reeve. It didn't have any sort of, there was nothing that felt really special about it. And Superman was a creeper.
And a deadbeat dad.
and a deadbeat dad.
Oh, that still makes me mad.
Yeah.
Okay, with mine, I'm going to tell you the movies that I really loved, a couple of them, and the ones that tried to follow it up but didn't work for me. Okay, it's a little different. So, Taken, first movie, amazing. It never caught on after that, after me. I'd say the 90s Batmans, or the 89 Batman, and then that chain of ones that followed after that, did not like them. Divergent, I thought was fantastic, but it never worked again for me after that. I don't know what happened. Scream was great. Never worked again for me.
Whoa, There I got to stop you and say shut up, because that's a great series all the way through and
Fight. You know, I just can't remember any of the other ones after the first Scream. I remember that one so vividly, but I don't remember any other ones. So maybe they are great. Maybe I'm just lying.
Wow.
Lying to myself.
You know? Shut your whore mouth right now. I don't want to hear this anymore. Blah, 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 blah.
Done. Sorry.
No, it's fine. Continue. That's fine.
Okay. Yes. Scream sucks. I mean, Scream was great. Scream 2. No. I don't remember any of the other ones. I don't remember it. I don't. But I remember that first one was so great. I just like it was awesome.
It just overpowered the other ones for you. That's what happened.
Yeah, the rest of them just all I can think of is Scary Movie. It's all just yeah.
Well, it might be slightly better because, you know, Scary Movie.
That was freaking hysterical, man. The first one?
Yeah.
Was really funny. It was really funny.
That started my love affair with Anna Faris. I absolutely adored her, and I think she's amazing just because of that movie.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you guys something really funny. And I'm going to make it really awkward.
Yeah, we'll be the judge of that.
I meant to say Scary Movie, but I said Scream.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. Like, I was like, I remember Scary Movie. It was hilarious, the first one. And then I don't remember the other. I know it's all blur now. It could be either one. I honestly don't know.
Oh, shit.
That one just popped in my head. So that was great. That was great. So it could be Scream or Scary Movie. I don't know.
Sean, I don't know how to argue with you when I don't know what your point is yet.
Neither do I, but this is great content. I love when I hear John laugh like that. He's really like having a hemorrhoid right now. He's creating a baby hemorrhoid.
That's funny. My big one is Hulk. Hulk is my big one.
Oh,
Which one? Hulk, the Eric Bana Hulk, because I absolutely love the series Incredible Hulk, the TV show. I didn't really know the comic that well, but I loved the series. So when the movie with Eric Bana came out, I was on cloud nine. I was super excited, and I still can't breathe because Sean made me laugh so hard. And then they made me angry. And you wouldn't like me when I'm angry. You know, all that jazz. Damn it. But it's like such a cinematic abortion. Everything about that movie is awful. And I don't understand how it got that bad because the cast isn't that bad. Tim Roth is great. And
well, you're talking about two different Hulks now.
I'm not talking about the Incredible Hulk. I meant the Incredible Hulk, the series I loved. Then Hulk was supposed to be what launched a new film series, and it was awful. And thankfully, they didn't make any more of those. That's what I'm talking about.
Right. Well, Tim Roth was in the different Hulk movie, though.
Who was in the Hulk one? I got them all confused.
It was Eric Bana and one of the Sams was chasing him down. One of the mustache dudes.
Oh, Sam Elliott. Yeah, Sam Elliott. Okay.
Sam Elliott was the one that was chasing him down. And there was
Jennifer Connelly? Nick?
Yes, that one was Jennifer Connelly.
Nick Nolte. Yeah, that's why I have the cast. I just had Tim Roth in there for something. Maybe I'm wanting it to be better and it wasn't. But it was just one of those awful, awful movies. Incredible Hulk was actually a decent movie, but it's a completely different series. So.
Right.
I wanted that to work horribly because I actually thought when Hulk was fighting and whatnot, those scenes were kind of cool. So I dug that. It's just the story and everything else around it was just abysmal.
I thought that one was pretty great. And there's a scene in there that I'll never forget, which is when Hulk racks himself on the barrel of a tank.
Mm-hmm.
He like rips the tank off, but he ends up hitting himself in the giblets with the barrel of it.
Wait, were you saying the movie was pretty great or the action scenes were pretty great?
The action scenes were pretty great. I just like my favorite part was actually watching the detail they put into Hulk getting hit in the nuts, like hitting himself in the nuts and being even madder about it.
And the Hulk dogs. What the hell is that about? Why are there Hulk dogs?
That's when you kind of lost me.
God. Do you guys think we'll actually get a new Hulk movie, or you think it's just like Ragnarok was it?
No, you'll just get Ragnarok. You're going to get him showing up in other movies.
Yeah, which is a better way to show him, honestly.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, yeah. It didn't. Can't. You don't want to overdo it, right?
Mm-hmm. All right. So break it down. Tell us your three saddest stories of franchises that never happened. Not just the movies themselves. Tell us why it hurt your inner child, so to speak. And you could do all three at each turn. So Sean, what are your three?
I read this question completely wrong, so I'll let you guys go first.
Okay. Okay, I'll go first. I talked about Serenity. That's my number three. I just love those characters so much, and I'm grateful that I got a proper ending to the series, but I really, really, really wanted more. Desperately, still do. I'd still go watch a Serenity Part 2 movie. Number two for me is Goonies. I love Goonies, and throughout the late 80s, early 90s, all I wanted was another film in that series, in any respect. I love those characters. I wanted another adventure. There are so many different ways they could have done with it. I just love the concept of kids getting older as a group, going off and getting into trouble, having adventures, foiling criminals, all that. I just love that. And I really, really
fighting monsters.
Yeah. And there's no, the movie made money. I never understood why they didn't do another one, but
one of them does magic.
Of course. Why not? You know, Corey Feldman, I know Corey Feldman would have done it because he'll do literally anything. So I can't imagine the rest of the cast wouldn't have fallen in line.
He was brawling. He's like, one day I'm going to do Marvel's guys. I'm going to go straight to, I'm going to be in two Marvel movies in the same month. Just watch.
That is foresight, if that's the case. If you sat around in the late 80s going, I'm going to be Thanos and Cable in the same summer. Good on him. Good on him. Number one for me, movie was a total flop. Didn't make any money. Most people I know hated it, but I absolutely love this movie. It's one of my all-time favorite comedies. It totally could have been a franchise. I would have paid double the admission price to see more of them. The Adventures of Ford Fairlane. I love that movie so much. Andrew Dice Clay is a private dick who only has musicians for clients. He's a rock and roll detective. Oh, everything. I wanted more, more, more. So much more. Still do. But it'd be sad now.
I did not see this conversation going that way.
Yeah, that's the franchise I really wanted, man, most of my life. Because I got more Evil Dead, got that, got more, almost everything. Everything nostalgic really came back for me for the most part. But Adventures of Ford Fairlane was a huge flop. Andrew Dice Clay was kind of written off Hollywood after that.
Hey!
Girl Scouts took two boxes. Oh!
Let them miss Muppet. All right, I'll quit.
Same one. Love that movie.
Welcome to the Ford Fairlane podcast.
Snap ahead. All right, John, go.
All right, so the first two I'm going to bring up are actually, I feel like I'm part of the problem. So the first one that I feel like I really, really missed a boat on getting any further into this franchise was I Am Number Four, which I get it. It was kind of like a alien version of Sparkly Vampires, but it was kind of cool though, because it focused more on the guy, the main character, as opposed to this like the love affair between the sparkly vampire and a girl who's just a cardboard piece of cardboard. I thought it was a really cool idea. I am part of the problem because I didn't run to the theater to go see it. I waited until VOD, and then when I saw it on VOD, I finally went, "Oh, that was a lot of fun!" and read the books and everything. And I think that it's a great series, and we're robbed of something great by not having that.
I've heard a lot of people talk that one up. I've actually never seen it.
I don't know. Well, because you've heard so many people talk it up, I don't know if you should, because you tend to react badly to that.
People say that. But that's not true. I watch it. I'll be fair about it. But just because you say it's great doesn't mean it's going to be great. Sorry.
Well, it's good. Fair. It's fun. Huh?
I don't want to watch it now. Because now you kind of – I don't. You kind of – that was kind of don't a ruin it. Comment on my personality that I didn't like. So piss right. off. I'm not watching it.
Well then, yeah. I just don't. I really just don't want you to ruin something for me.
I'm glad there was I Am Number Five. I'm glad. Whatever the hell the title was.
And the next one that I feel like I'm part of the problem with is John Carter.
Yes.
I follow the artwork all my life, and for that series, I follow the book a bit, and I really liked the idea of it, and I always thought it was pretty great. But then the previews came out, and it was kind of like, all right. And then the media blitz that happened with it kind of didn't do anything for me. And then it took Aaron saying, hey, this John Carter movie, after it was done and out of the theater and on VOD, is actually a good movie to watch. I finally rented it, and I love it. It's one of my, I would say, top 50 movies ever made.
Wait, you watched that because of me? You watched that because of me?
Yeah.
All right. I'll watch I Am Number 4 now. I will.
No, don't do it.
I Am Number 4 was good. I like it. But that had Teresa Palmer, right? I love Teresa Palmer. I like
Yes. Teresa Palmer was actually, I was reading up on that one, and the thing that they wish they did more of was have more of Teresa Palmer in it, because she is not the love interest, but she is totally kick ass, and they feel like they missed the boat by not having her in it more.
That's who I wanted to be the queen so bad in Aquaman, Teresa Palmer.
Oh my God, you speaking to the choir. Mm-hmm. And then finally,
wait. I just got to mention, Sean just made the creepiest. I've ever heard in my life. You can continue now.
You know, I'm actually going to appreciate the fact that you had to point out that it was Sean that did it, because I'm sure people would assume it was me.
Fair enough.
All right. No, and then finally, the giggling. One that
what is wrong with you? Do you need a moment?
Your coffee's kicking in.
Hello. Oh, you sure it wasn't a little bit of crack?
Just a little.
Oh, a little. That's my creamer.
Secondhand crack.
All right. Right. Finally, one that I'm surprised it didn't go anywhere was The A-Team.
Oh, yes.
I really kind of love that movie.
That was my number 4, so I'm glad somebody brought it up. Yeah, good call.
Yeah, that was one of those things that I can watch over and over again, and it still just is equally as fun. They flew a tank.
I just caught that on cable, I think, 2 weeks ago. Still holds up. I still can't for life me understand why that didn't make a shit ton of money.
I don't get it.
It was great. It's so much fun. From start to finish, that movie is fun.
Yeah.
All right, Sean, have you figured out the topic yet?
Well, I'm going to wing this. So let's say, let's travel back to 19, whatchamacallit, probably between 85 and 88. Garbage Pail Kids. Let's make that a franchise. I really miss that. It was these creepy little, scary little ugly things that give you nightmares. And I really want that to be a franchise, but it never did. It didn't do well. Nobody liked it. It's probably why it didn't get any praise. But Garbage Pail Kids was awesome. I like it. And it leaves, there's just like this scar in my memory, and it's like a cancerous tumor piece of my memory of this creepy movie. Yeah, let's make more of those. I like that.
Okay.
Street Fighter. I would like to see more Street Fighter movies because. Well, I love Street Fighter back then. That was like what got me into video games, kind of almost.
Would you want Jean-Claude Van Damme in it?
I don't know. I guess I'd take anybody who would do it.
Okay.
Anybody who would do the role of Street Fighter, that would be pretty awesome. Also, I'd like to see more Mummy. I like to see Mummy because I love Tom Cruise. So more Mummy movies.
I thought you hate Tom Cruise.
I love Tom Cruise. He's okay. The best.
It depends on the day of the weekend, what you ask.
He's making this up. This is all a lie. He didn't like Garbage Pail Kids either, did you?
No.
He doesn't even remember what the Garbage Pail Kids are. He was like, you know, they give you nightmares and stuff.
No,
it does not sound like
Garbage Pail Kids. I watched clips recently. You know what, though? Seriously, like E.T. could have been a great franchise.
It was supposed to be. And then Spielberg said, nah.
Mm-hmm. It could have been.
Yeah, that could have been cool. Or it could have ruined it. You know what I mean? It could have totally ruined it. And like, okay, I'm going to piggyback off of Aaron, but for real though, Goonies, now that is a great choice because for the same reasons, even like Stand By Me, you know, like just kids doing their thing going on. We have no parents with us. Let's get leeches all over us. You know, weird stuff, you know, stuff that kids do. Let's go walk through the swamps because they're not educated.
I think you missed the point of that movie a little bit.
Yeah, I flubbed this one. Sorry, guys.
That's okay. Okay, that does it for our best of. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And remember, we will be back next week with our fall TV preview. I think it's going to be a fun episode. We just needed a couple weeks off to recharge the batteries. The end of summer, you know, it's a busy year. We watched so many movies, so many TV shows. Everybody just needed a break. I'm sure you guys did too. You got a lot going on with spring. Actually, it's fall. You know, I don't even know what time of year it is. That's how much I needed a break. So I hope you guys enjoyed this collection of the best of the second quarter of 2018. And we're looking forward to kicking off the fall. We got some cool stuff coming up. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. Thanks again. And I figure I might just end every episode with this clip. I don't know, because it's that fun for me. Why don't you take us out, John?
All right. So remember, we got a Facebook group and you can follow us on Twitter at BIPOCPorn. And remember to grab hold and go with the Android app, Spotify, and we're at the HollywoodOutsider.com. We're also on your favorite podcast app. You can find my artwork on Insta and just about everybody else at rjohn.draws. I don't know why there's a period in there, but it is. Amanda's on C. Or Smirk. I got her name and the name of the podcast mixed up. I don't know what to do with this anymore. And remember, you can find Aaron with Remake This Room Rewrite. Oh, no, you can't anymore because he sucks. Beyond Westworld and The Blacklist Exposed. I want to thank everybody for being here.
Glad to be here.
Oh, I'm crying.
So that's the end of the show. I want to thank you all for listening. And remember, the next time you head to the theater, buy Twizzlers. Maybe popcorn. Ah!